Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome back to Weekend Confirmed, the one and only video game podcast you should be listening to in the entire universe.
Nice. I like how you're stepping up to the plate like that.
I know. I don't know. It's just like, that's the deal. And also,
fuck you, Mars.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I had to say that. They do an amazing podcast, though.
They do. You know, their Nintendo Wii podcast. Oh, man.
Anyway, and you should also be reading shagnews.com because it's awesome. And I love it. I don't know why. I'm just hyper today. And also, delayed penalty. That was what we were looking for.
Penalty.
Delayed penalty.
I would be really late if I said
you have lost your Canadian citizenship for delayed penalty.
I hope I at least find my passport so I can go home.
Delayed resolution on that argument.
And today's delayed penalty is the ref already has his hands up, but it's up to you to decide what today's weekend confirmed drinking game will be. All up to you.
That was a great thread.
All up to you. Joining us today are Mr. Jeff Cannata.
Hey, that's Cannata with two N's and one T.
And Zav... D'Amatos.
Thank you very much. It's nice to see you here, Garnet, and sober for once. No.
What? Wow.
That was what I had in the back end.
Just blows.
I shouldn't have said back end. That sounded weird.
You know, actually, we're talking about this game, this show being more fun. It was way more fun, you know, back in the, like, drink
back
all
in the
time.
Day.
Back in the drink all the time days.
Well, why do we got water like suckers?
Because we are like suckers.
I blame Del Rio. It's a bad producer decision.
End of the table, rocking his Halo 2 t-shirt, Ringer t-shirt, would be Mr. Christian Spicer.
I'm sorry my voice sounds like this. It's how I was born.
Can't you step up to the plate, smoke a couple of cigarettes before you come in or something?
So it's nice to be here.
Yeah.
Glad to be back and we can confirm with you guys.
To be fair, I would probably sound like that if I never started smoking.
I like how smoking gives you an accent.
I know that was...
It makes you cool.
You sound like the Fonz.
It didn't lower his voice, and it just gave him...
I love cigarettes. They're great. I don't know what happened to my voice.
He turned into the demo man from Team Fortress 2 when he smoked.
Oh, you've been smoking since I was 14. I don't even know.
Now you're Harry Potter.
Boy, you could record this and be like a whole soundboard for Worms. That is the best part of playing Worms, by the way.
Yeah.
I got it for... Did you get it for iPad?
No.
You can get Worms on iPad now. It's really cheap, but like the control system is still... It's not quite as good just using the touch thing. It was a little awkward getting accustomed to it, but... Damn, the voices are fun. That's kind of that game's ace in the hole, isn't it? All right, you're like completely bored on the
Worms. It's its personality. So the whole game is full of personality. It's what separates it from Tanks or any Scorched Earth or any of those other basic
what about
versions.
World of Tanks.
What? There's an entire world of tanks?
There's an entire world of tanks.
Oh, shit. Why didn't anyone tell me?
I got to get moving on my development.
How's their podcast?
Universe of tanks.
GamePro, what is Jason Wilson's title there? He's a honcho.
I think it is honcho.
Yeah, he's a...
That would be awesome to have cards that you hand out to people.
Honcho.
Honcho! That would be fantastic. Anyway, so he's a former head of the copy desk at Ziff when we do all magazines. He's big into World of Tanks. He tweets about it and like he's into it.
I just know the name of the game and game
World
of the year.
World of Tanks.
I think it wins for most hilarious title of game. I thought Dr.
In a World Full of Tanks.
Dr. Renke's what is it? Oh god, I was saying it so many times, but it turns out just part of Saints Row. But they had a big poster for it at E3. Dr. Renke's reality.
Hmm?
Oh, man. I was saying it over and over, and I can't remember. It doesn't matter. But World of Tanks wins, because that wasn't an actual game.
Good story.
But World of Tanks wins.
Cool story, bro.
Don't mind me. We'll edit that part out.
First. Let's just go through all the internet memes.
So during the pre-show, Jeff suggested, I was saying, actually, I thought we were all cleaned up on E3 stuff, but he did bring up a game that's quite interesting to talk about, which is Metro. So maybe we'll talk about Metro Last Light for a little bit. But then we have lots of other great games to talk about. I'm very excited to talk about Shadows of the Damned.
Nice.
I hear you laughing at your desk like insanely throughout
awesome.
The week while you're playing it.
Which is
really distracting since you sit right behind me.
I know. I can't get over how much I'm enjoying that game. It's fucking awesome. And then we also have... Fear 3. That was only a marketing... Remember the whole debate over the titling? It's like, that was just for the box.
Jeff still calls his iPhone an iPhorn, though. So I mean,
I do.
Is it as good as Fear 3?
That has a lot to do with what he's usually looking up on it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Things related with four in them?
Yes.
All right.
What else do we have down here? Oh, bringing the PS3 love. The man at the end of the table has the infamous two conversations, which our own Jeff Mattis has also been playing. And we also have a review up. I mean, it's like a lot of interest around the Infamous 2. Horrible release timing.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
For us, I got chided on the tweeters. Yeah, when I mentioned that it was ill-timed. It was like, well, the rest of the world isn't at E3.
But it's poor timed for getting coverage out.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
While all news outlets are at E3, they're putting out E3 content, and all of a sudden your press release and your media and your assets get buried, and that's what the rest of the world is looking at, and then right. It's like, oh shit, that game's out, and it just kind of gets unfortunately overlooked, but hopefully people played it.
So on the tweeters this morning, I got involved in a little discussion with some fellow media-type friends, and Mr. Ryan Payton as well. We've had him on the show before. Everyone knows him from 343 Industries. We were talking about the relevancy of the Japanese big name game developers and whether or not they still get the buzz that they did, or if they ever actually got that much buzz. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the 10th anniversary of a lot of games other than Halo and how big 2001 was to the video game business. And then Mr. Zav D'Amatos has the news you can use.
I like that. Bring it to you hard.
Again, right. I really should stop saying stuff because it just sounds sexual.
So I haven't had a lot of time to play the game we're going to talk about first. We'll go to Metro
third.
After this. How about let's hop into a game that's out right now first. Just
sounds
to get
good.
The ball rolling.
Which one?
Trenched.
Man, I was bummed that we were talking about that because I literally lost my code for Trenched.
Greg, can you paging Greg Rice? Can you send the guy who can't keep a hold of his?
I'm
what
a
is
moron.
It? Like, wait, didn't you get it in email?
I did. That's
how did
why
you
I
lose?
Lost. I don't know. I was searching and searching because it was sent as an attachment.
It's not like you took it home and like put it on the counter and then like, oh, I put it on the discard and I threw it in the shredder.
Yeah, it must have. I don't know.
It fell out.
Gone on eBay.
It fell out of my email.
I think if you could explain the situation, you wouldn't have lost it.
Exactly. That's what lost means.
Well, so we haven't played it a lot, and I would bet that actually we'll probably talk about it again next week because I've played like the first four levels, and I fucking love it. It's really, really fun.
I can't wait to get my hands on it.
You know what it reminds me of? So, and actually, this is a point to come back to when we talk about the Game Critics Awards because it's in the strategy category there, which
right.
I think is indicative of how difficult it is for even folks who do this every day talking about games to you know categorize games of this sort.
And how few strategy games are being released.
Well, that too. But more so, I mean, even if there were so few strategy games, that doesn't mean that you start trying to assign a genre type to a game that it isn't. It's simply because it's difficult to get. But this game reminds me a tremendous amount of the PC update that was done, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago of Battlezone. Mm-hmm. Did anyone ever play that?
No.
It was really, really fun. So what they did was they took a 3D engine, they put you inside this battle tank, and which was the Battlezone tank, right?
Yeah.
But then to make it a more fleshed out game than just the old Battlezone, you know, green line drive around thing, you were able to call in support troops and command them on the battlefield. So here in Trenched, you're driving this this mech, which is funny because like the trenched name means it applies to the fact that like the cockpit canopy thing you sit in is like the old World War I trench. So it's like you're in a trench with guns mounted on it. And then you can call in emplacements much like you would in a tower defense game. And then it's done also in the tower defense meme of you have channels that the enemies approach from and you get to see a little timer of when the next wave is coming. And of course there's like then you get into like some rock, paper, scissors thing of like, you know, ground to air attack weapons versus air enemies and ground to ground strong weapons and slow down devices and all that kind of stuff. But it really comes together very well because it has that sort of toy soldiers feel to it where you're in the midst of the game, but at the same time you're able to run around and shoot stuff and you're able to pull in all of these different turrets and stuff. It's really fun. I think it's really well put together.
Who is it for? I mean, it's not that's I think
someone
the
who likes
part.
To play games.
For you?
Well, no, but I mean, that's the I know someone who likes to play games, but you have a hard time categorizing it. But people are like, I love first person shooters, or I love mech games, or that's why I feel like games like this that cross so many lines. It's like I see it as a strategy game, and I'm like, I can't even play Civ Rev. This isn't for me. But then it's...
I think it's not really strategy in the traditional sense. I mean, you bring up Toy Soldiers, which sold really well on the Xbox Live Arcade. And this is an Xbox Live Arcade exclusive. And I think that the people who like Toy Soldiers, which is about to get a sequel, will really enjoy this game.
Oh,
I've only played the first level or two. And there's not a lot of strategy to it in the beginning. It's sort of managing the waves. But in the very beginning, it's kind of just teaching you everything. So I haven't been so far into the game that I've learned all of the mechanics behind it. But I think that it's like it does sort of go after this third person shooter, also strategy element. The strategy isn't, at least in the beginning, isn't about placement so much as it is just managing the stuff that's coming at you.
Sure.
So
yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Definitely. Yeah.
It's funny that you mentioned Battlezone because I literally just played Battlezone. We did a segment that we shot this last week for TRS with the iCade, that thing that you can buy that turns your iPad into an arcade. And I played
you played the original Battlezone.
The original Battlezone. Still fun.
But
still fun.
Hey, vector graphics.
Yeah, man.
Surprisingly effective at still getting you to have like that imaginative moment, right?
Yeah.
Because they're not so realistic that you're distracted by how they don't look good anymore.
Right.
They're like, it looks like it always did because it's green lines on a black background.
Yeah.
That's why Nintendo games are still playable, but a lot of PS1 and N64 games aren't. You don't get into that awkwardness of, this looks like crap.
Yeah, so I can strongly recommend Trenched. I think it's really, really fun. It has a sort of light mech development feel to it, because there are different cockpits that you can trade off between heavy and engineering, depending on whether you want to be able to call in more turrets and devices to put on the battlefield, or if you want to carry more weapons yourself. So it's kind of a planning thing there. Like, do you want to walk around and be super armored yourself, but not be able to call in as many items into the battlefield? Or do you want to be able to call more turrets and emplacements into the battlefield, but not carry quite so much yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of different play styles there. And cool. It tracks all these stacks, of course. Like, it shows you at the end of a match how many things you directly killed and how many things your turrets and stuff killed for you. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, because right now the enemies strikes me as a little kind of generic. It's like this electro-futuristic channel. I don't know. Like, there's this weird dude with televisions that talk to you and you blow stuff up and it makes
The story in the game is really funny, though.
It is funny.
Yeah.
It is really funny.
I love the fact that since Double Fine made this decision to go smaller...
Dude, they're cranking them out.
We've had three games in the span. We wouldn't have even gotten one from them.
Genius decision by them.
It's wonderful. And they're creative all across the board, different kinds of games they're coming out with. It's great to see.
Unless it's Weird Al being a talking head in a TV, I'm not interested.
You mentioned something in the office that you haven't mentioned here, is that it sort of feels like they pulled out the best part of Brutal Legend.
Yeah. Oh, Trench. I definitely think that
where the game goes halfway through, basically, on Brutal Legend.
Yeah, because it becomes that strategy, that action strategy tactical game, and that's exactly like this is the best part of that, where you're out in the environment, you're managing a battle, and you're fighting at the front lines of it at the same time. And it's funny. I would love to maybe in another few months or maybe a year at some point in time go back to Brutal Legend, because I wonder how much of the response that we had to Brutal Legend was a response to what sort of expectations we may have made in our own imaginations.
Oh, completely. Absolutely. Not in our imaginations.
Rock and roll adventure game.
It wasn't in our imaginations. It was in the way that game was positioned.
Yeah, probably so.
And the demo that people played.
Yeah, and it seemed like, it's going to be this third-person action game, and it really becomes something quite different, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but I think it did defy a lot of expectations.
And four-player co-op. Four-player co-op in Trench. As a matter of fact, a lot of people who have been playing it and have gotten further down the line than I have say that it's almost imperative that they feel like the game's pretty difficult and it's really attuned to having four-player co-op. But it's really easy to get together a group. When you're in your base, you just walk over to this radio room and you can join live matches through matchmaking, or you can invite your friends. Super easy, obviously. It's live.
Is it multiplayer co-op?
Is it multiplayer co-op?
Oh, Zab.
Making fun of something I said earlier.
No, it's single-player co-op, Zab. It's
single-player. Okay.
Speaking of co-op... Fithrier
yes.
Now you have co-op through the entire game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's built around it, in fact.
Which is interesting because you remember that originally the Paxton Fettel stuff was going to be supportive in nature throughout the main storyline.
Right.
Right.
But no longer. Now you can play the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, it's... did you guys play co-op or did you play single player?
I haven't played co-op. I've only played single player. And when you play the single player missions, you unlock the ability to play... the missions again as Fettel.
Yeah, which is interesting, which I think is kind of a cool way to go about that.
It certainly makes the game a lot longer. I think the game is only about 5 or 6 hours long.
Yeah,
it's very
short.
It's a pretty short game, and then when you can play it again as a different character.
Is it like 5 or 6, really?
It's eight levels. Each level has a target time that you are trying to beat at the end of the level, and almost all of them are just over a half hour.
Yeah.
So 8 levels,
wow,
just over a half hour apiece.
Now, there's some interesting decisions that they make in terms of the co-op, because you could play two-player co-op, and someone plays as the point man, who is the brother that never speaks, and one person plays as Fettel, who I think is a much more interesting character in terms of what he can do. Mm-hmm. He has all of these special abilities. But the game tracks score. The game is very heavy on like, oh, you did this, 500 points, and all this other stuff. It keeps tracking your score. The game's ending is, when you're playing co-op...
Spoilers here.
Is... Well, it's spoilers on how the game works. The game's ending is based on who gets the higher score.
Yeah, which I think is really cool. It's one of the things that I was most excited
for. It's interesting that they don't actually mention it to people, though.
Well, I think it's better that they don't mention it, because there's not really any way for you to... So basically, I think the most interesting part of the game is the metagame that's right. happening. And every level, you have a series of tracked achievements, which aren't really achievements, but they're, you know...
Objectives or challenges within the game.
Yeah, you know, hide behind cover for a certain amount of time. You kill with a certain weapon a certain number of times. And they get more interesting from there. Mm-hmm. But the most unique thing about it is most games that track that kind of thing, it's over the course of the entire game.
Right.
And this is within each level, and it starts over. So the same things that you achieved in the last level, you can achieve again... every level of the game, and at the end of each level you get a report card on what you did, and then each one is sort of assigned a different heading under which it's tracked. Mm-hmm. I think they're like aggression and tactics, like psych, and stuff like that,
psych power and stuff like that. Yeah,
and so you're ranked as to how what playstyle you favored as you went through, and then at the end of the game Alma makes a decision between one of you, and it's based on her scoring, but it's kind of you can't really.
She has one rose to give out. She's like, exactly. You get the last rose.
Yeah, but you can't really.
Just so we know that he gave me the rose in this scenario.
Wait, does it end in another uncomfortable sex scene?
You say uncomfortable. No.
Yeah, define. I mean, it's.
Two?
We could.
Fear two,
people are,
that would be the definition.
Yeah, no, not like that.
That was
it's
creepy.
Definitely an uncomfortable, gross, kind of weird thing. I really liked the second Fear game.
I really liked it as well.
I really
quite
liked
a bit.
The first Fear game.
I did too.
This game, the storytelling, I think, is the weakest part.
Oh, the story's not good. I mean, the thing that is a little sad about it is that the cinematics are really great, and they're designed really well because I mean they got John Carpenter to help design them, and I think that they're shot in a really interesting way. Well, in terms
Jeff,
of...
Jeff, you disagree.
I do.
In terms of previous Fear games, I think that it looks a lot better in terms of that.
I mean, it's interesting that we don't really get many CGI FPS cutscenes anymore, and this game does that, but...
Whoa. What?
Yeah, you get you get full-on CG cutscenes, and
I didn't know
even
that.
Some of them are from the first person, so it cuts to like, oh, I kind of wish the game looked like this. The game looks nice, but then you cut to CGI in the first person, you're kind of like, oh.
Does a crappy story make it more replayable, though? You know what I mean? If it's built around a scoring system, I feel like games that have a great single-player narrative, even if they track all this cool stuff, I personally am less likely to replay it because I played it for that story and experience. Mm-hmm. But if the story is kind of throwaway, what makes it fun is this meta game, then I'm like, well, I don't really care if I skip the cutscenes and just go through and...
I don't think it's mutually exclusive. I think you could have a really fun story that is also fun to replay. But I get your point. I think that, unfortunately, they squander a really interesting premise, you know, and...
But is it interesting anymore? I mean, this is...
Maybe not.
The thing that bothers me about the game is that it's not... It's not...
Maybe not.
Proof is in the pudding.
The game is called Fear. The second game was very action-focused and lost a lot of the terror. And when they brought in John Carpenter and Steve Niles, who did 30 Days of Night, they said, well, we're bringing them in because we want to bring the horror back. You know, we want it to be
a
scary game.
There were some pretty horrific parts of two.
The second one I thought it was an awesome game. It's an awesome story. You have a purpose. You're going to figure out this question that's being asked through the entire game, and the resolution of that question is shocking and interesting and pays off, right?
And when you get to the plant in the second one where they're like
I know, it's messed up, dude.
Brainwashing and like creating
all the super soldiers and stuff. Awesome.
And like those things come out of the wall and like they chase you. Oh, that shit was fucked up.
Well, you still have stuff coming out of the wall in this game. But unfortunately, the question that the game is asking that you're constantly pushing you through the narrative.
Is it Fear 3 or Fear 3? Fear 3 or Fear 3?
That's a good question. It doesn't make any sense, A. B, you don't really get an idea of how any of this works together, and there's really no reason moment to moment for each of these levels. It's like, well, you know what would be cool? Let's have a bridge level. You know what would be really cool? Let's have a level set in the suburbs. You know what would be really cool? Let's And none of them, it makes no difference where you are.
So it's like Call of Duty.
Yeah, it is.
I mean you're saying that, and I'm like, so it's like Call of Duty.
It's like, oh, we have to compete with Call of Duty now.
That's a shame.
Because this game, I feel like...
I don't feel it's doing that at all.
I feel like it really became a military game with this kind of interesting possession mechanic from the second player.
Right.
Which is cool.
Which is interesting for the second player.
Right. But it's interesting if you're playing the first player and having that person there, it's fun to play with that person doing that as well.
Jeff, you and Danny played it together for Totally Rad Show, right?
Yeah.
And so which side did you play?
I played the boring point man side.
Well, that's not boring. But was it boring?
No, it wasn't. It's a solid... You know what? Having a good military shooter with a slowdown mechanic, with interesting level design and smart AI still works, right? The level design in this game is interesting in that almost every situation you're in is built with a series of sort of interlocking circles everywhere. So you're always being flanked. And there is no place to be
that is safe. You're walking into Zav's argument right now.
I don't know. I think that there are interesting environments. I like where they go. I think the level design is not good. I think it feels like I'm playing the library level in Halo again and again. Especially there's a level where you're in like a discount mart or something.
Yeah,
and
you're
like in a Costco and you keep going up these ladders and you go into this area that has like good atmosphere where you see all these HDTVs and everything's really ominous and that stuff is really cool, but then it turns into this area where, you know, I have to go look for a ladder. I can't find the ladder. Everything kind of looks the same. All the levels just don't really make sense. I mean,
I agree with that. There was a lot of times where we just didn't know where to go next.
I mean, the problem with Fear 1 is that everything was in a fucking factory.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, this at least tries to go and explore other things. Narratively, it doesn't make a lot of sense, and the story itself is not good. I do like the gameplay, though.
Yeah.
I think the gameplay really works. I mean, they did the cover system that they sort of adopted or took from Killzone 3 is in there. You can do peeking over corners, and there's a lot of vaulting, things like that. You could do, you know, the slide and kick mechanic stuff is still in there. That part of it is really fun. The problem that I have with it is that the levels are just not designed very well.
I think from a where do I go next point of view, the levels are obtuse and oddly designed, yes. But from a interesting, unique, never the same way twice firefight perspective, I think they're really cool and a good design, because there is, in most games, you mentioned Killzone. Killzone's a great example of this. You're sort of always just pushing forward, right?
Of course.
And you get you clear out an area, you move to that point, everything is safe behind you, and you're shooting forward trying to figure out where to go next.
You get a guitar chord when you've made it to the, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, that's definitely the mentality of a lot of those designs.
I kind of feel like your argument is now going to be that this game does the opposite because things come out from behind you, whereas I think the way that these levels are designed is you're usually in a big round room where things can come at you from every side, but once you clear that area, you're sort of safe again.
Well, but you're going to move to the next room at that point. But while you're in that room, there is no point to be at where your back is against something and you're safe.
Right.
You are constantly having to move. And I think it's a service to the first Fear, which was lauded for its smart AI. And a lot of that is smart level design in the sense that you never feel comfortable because the AI is constantly flanking you, constantly throwing grenades to get you to move. And when you're on the move, you never feel safe, which is fun because you have this cool slowdown mechanic that lets you navigate those areas in a more dynamic way. You have the upper hand because they usually have the upper hand tactically.
I think the game is way more fun when you're fighting the soldiers, but when you're fighting like the cultists, like there are these guys who have C4 strapped to them that run at you like kamikazes in Serious Sam.
Okay.
Those are the worst.
I rarely find enemies like that to be much fun.
Yeah.
And they're in so many games now.
They are.
Infamous 2 has their version of
the worst is really? when you're climbing up all those ladders and you're going in a circle and then they start climbing the ladders and like running at you. And it's like, this is not a fun idea, guys. Like, I don't know why this is something that.
Yeah, I agree. This game is flawed.
I had a lot of fun, though.
I did, too. Yeah. And having that possession mechanic is really pretty cool, man. It's jumping into
a series of soldiers are running at you, having your partner jump into one of them that's behind the main group and can now be behind them instantly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Mechs are always cool.
Always.
Always cool.
Well, and these they're guys, in gears now.
You know, first of all, Fear 2 had good mech play.
Yeah, great mech play, yeah.
And now you've got the Day 1 guys who did the mech assault stuff, so obviously they have the chops for mech, so I'm not surprised the mech play is good.
Right.
I do want to quickly say,
I'm happy
though,
it is, actually.
I do want to quickly say that maybe it's a... It's like, you know, it's monster movies where if you see too much or learn too much about a monster, they become less scary. I think this game is less scary because we know so much about Alma and we know so much about her kids. And I just, every time I see Alma, she doesn't look like a scary girl anymore. To me, it looks like a girl who's lost her fucking ball. Like, I'm supposed to help her find her ball. It's not
it's in
scary.
Her belly now.
Yeah, it's not scary. It's now just become sort of a nuisance.
Well, I feel like a lot of the stuff that's happening to this series is that it's sort of slowly becoming Resident Evil. You know, which is...
Gets redonkadonk too quickly?
It gets redonkadonk, and it also, it's just basically a zombie apocalypse. At this point, it's just a zombie apocalypse.
So the cultists essentially
Wait, but it's not a zombie apocalypse at all.
The cultists, well,
I guess I don't know what happens in 3, but...
It pretty much... The first game is really cool, right? You're a soldier, you're into this building for what you think is a pretty straight-up reason. I need to, you know...
Paxton Fettel is there, and he's raising this army, and he's about to go wild and rampage.
Right. And then it turns out, oh, there's this horror movie happening in this building. So it's sort of like Die Hard meets The Ring, right?
Right.
Which is a kind of a cool idea, right?
I liked it.
And then it wraps up in Akira.
Yeah. And then the second one...
Well,
you know,
it does.
It does. That's
you need
good,
to move. You need to move. One. You need to find out the source of that. You need to find out the origin. You're on a Project Origin.
Yeah.
So you go to where that all started. This one... It's just, oh, there's a zombie apocalypse happening across the entire planet. Let's go to a few locations for some reason. And then...
Let's hop in this helicopter, guys. Let's go.
Probably
level,
the worst...
Underwater level.
The worst last level of a game I've played in a long time. It has a terrible last level.
Oh, I haven't got that far yet.
Terrible for difficulty or terrible
no,
for just...
No, there's nothing to... It isn't anything. And then there's a boss.
Yeah, wait, do you have to fight out of Alma's womb? Because that would be awesome.
I mean, we can talk about it if we can label spoilers. It's...
So, are you labeling spoiler here?
Yeah, then? Let's label spoilers for people that don't want.
All right, and we'll go to the end. So, if you're wanting to fast forward, take a look at the show notes and look for the time to pick up on the second.
There's not
segment.
Much to say here, to be honest with you. You arrive at the place where you and your brother grew up, which is teased through the whole menu system. You see the sort of they were. You know,
which would be like the lab, right?
The lab.
It'd be like the lab where you were like popped out of the weird
genetic
experiment with Alma or whatever. Like, fucking
you go there,
shit.
You walk around and you find items from your youth that have significance.
Do you pick them up and look at them and go, this is no use to me?
That's not LA Noir. No, but you do pick them up. You break them. It happens like 3 or 4
of
times.
Of course you break them.
You break them. You pick them up, break
Fuck
them.
Fuck this light bright.
Because you're like, you know, you're freeing yourself from your memories, right?
Right, right.
Okay.
And then a boss battle happens, and that's the entire last level.
Wait, do you
it's
like
terrible.
Do you break a light bright, and then the light bright attacks? Like, how
no.
does it work?
No, you just break it.
Oh, really?
You walk into a room, you see a little cutscene happen, and then you break it, and you walk to the next place.
I've
you
stepped
break
on
it.
This Lego too many times.
And then there's a terrible boss fight that's ridiculous. You shoot the glowy point, and that's the end of the game. Whereas all the other levels have a pretty cool... series of firefights.
Does it is it ever able when people who got the spoiler tag is going to miss this part. Is it ever able to duplicate, you know, for instance, I really liked 2. You said you liked 2.
I did. Yes, very
the
much.
The school scene, especially like when you got into the cafeteria, is it ever able to like escalate to that point of just chaos, but like you feel like you're just under this pressure to get through this space. You don't know where things are coming from, but you're still just oriented enough to feel like you're just holding on to the edge of control.
Yeah, I mean, I think at its best moments it is still that. It is still like there are guys coming all around. One of the major bad guys is this enemy that can like warp guys in all around you. And so you never feel safe. You're always on the move.
Had that in 2.
Yeah. And that's
well, actually
that's still
them.
Very fun. It's still very fun. That concept of, like you said, kind of feeling like you're on the edge. You got to use that slow-mo to kind of get your bearings and survive for the next moment.
It sounds like it's worth playing in the sense that there's enough fun mechanics, and even
it's worth playing
because
it's fun,
and it's short enough. Yeah. Not as if you're going to get into this thing and be like, "Oh, I never finished Twilight Princess because I just lost track of it."
Right.
Like, you can sit down and play this and have the fun experience. And
I mean, and you can, if you play this single player, you can play it, you know, once by yourself playing as Point Man, then as Paxton Fettel, and then you can play it co-op. I mean, there's a lot, and the multiplayer, which we haven't even touched on. Have you played some of it?
I have.
Really,
it's
really
cool.
Fun.
It's cool.
All right, is it worth coming back to on the other side of the break? The multiplayer?
Briefly. Yeah.
All right, when we come back on the other side of the break, we will hit Fear 3 multiplayer as well as a multitude of other games. Coming up a little later in the music break, I'm a Computer on Gaff has been after us a little bit, and we finally caught up with his band, Felix Culpa. We're going to play The Constant in the music break. All that and more later on in the show. Stick around. You won't want to miss it. This is Weekend Confirmed. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from shacknews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Weekend Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices. Hey, all right, we are back. And a quick note for Foliorum Viridium from AGAF was very happy amongst, along with several other folks, that I talked about F1 last week. So I'm going to answer his F1 question real quick before we get back to the Fear 3 multiplayer. He says, could I elaborate on how it feels different? That would be the handling model in F1 that I did the demo for in 2011. As to 2010, he says, you mentioned how the car feels more connected to the ground now with the Pirelli tires, but does it feel more sim than 2010? Well, here's the way it feels different, and I haven't played a ton of it. The way it feels different is that what I think that Codemasters did a good job of modeling in the first time out was how much the aerodynamics package on an F1 car improves its handling at speed. So as you were driving the car, it was imperative that you get up to speed in order to get the aero to work for the car and push the car down and really bring your handling into line. And then I felt like when you were in the low speed sections, especially in the chicanes, that the tire modeling just wasn't quite up to the same fidelity. And so it was really hard to get a feel for where is the limit of traction with the car when it's not being pushed down by the aero. This time around, I had a much stronger sense of, oh, I understand where the limit of this car's traction is right now and how fast I can put it through this corner when I'm at low speed and I don't have the aerodynamics package working. So there you go. That's your F1 question answer.
Garnet's F1 minute.
It's often awesome. They're all just like, are we going to start the show again? What the hell are we doing here? Hope that answers your questions. Always glad to answer questions about racing games. Surprise. Oh, surprise.
Zav and I might have to talk about a racing game then.
I want to hear about Fear 3 multiplayer. Does it increase the longevity of the game? Is it something you'll come back to? Is it something you'll take Call of Duty out of your console to play?
I don't think this game is trying to be. The multiplayer modes in this game are so different.
Yeah, that's the one that
was
cool.
It was like Run, motherfucker, or something.
It's fucking Run, which someone just took a shot because I said the F word on the show. It's basically there's you and three friends can play this game where you're running through a level and there are enemies everywhere and you have to kill them. And there's this wall of death that is following you. And you basically just need to run through the level and get to the end of it and kill as many people as you can to get past them before this wall hits you. And it's awesome.
Yeah. A wall of death.
Yeah. Wall of death.
Wall of death.
Yeah.
They also do there's a couple of really innovative modes, but they do their take on a horde mode. Is waves of enemies, obviously. But there's some cool little tweaks to it. The first thing is it has the best audio cue for when a new wave is coming in ever, because it's like footsteps, like a shit ton of army dudes like coming in. And you just hear like marching. All right, here we go. Here we go. And you're like, oh my God, there are so many guys. I don't know where they are, but they're coming.
That's awesome. I haven't played that mode.
It really adds to
the
anxiety.
And then you see a guy in a bunny suit.
And the other cool thing is that on the horde mode is that in order to get ammo, you have to, after you clear the wave of enemies, you have to run out, find a supply crate that's somewhere in the level, pick it up, and run back to your base and get it in within a circle to have the ammo.
Okay, I haven't played that mode.
It's
that's awesome.
Awesome. Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
So you're like running with this little crate. he takes his guns down, you know, and he's just holding.
Do you have to like run multiplayer like with someone and they have to hold one side?
No,
it's
no,
just one person.
Just one person, okay. But it's frantic and fun. And then there's the other one where it's just all about possessing people and collecting their souls, mm-hmm. and you hop into another body and then you kill a guy and take his souls and hop into another body. It's fun stuff.
And it's different, which is nice.
Which I love. Yeah.
Well, if you love different, you should definitely be into Shadows of the Damned. I'm so in love with this game, and I think that if you're into, if you've ever thought that I would like to play a Suda 51 game, but you've been a little bit discouraged by the eccentricity of what those games have been, whether they be like No More Heroes or Killer 7, the beauty of this game, and so I've been saving this to because Zav asked me this question earlier, is that by using the Unreal Engine and making it a shooter at its foundation, they made the perfect combination of I can sit down and play this game and understand it, and they can creatively go fucking batshit crazy, and I can still play the game. Yeah. Because I still have the foundation of I know how to play this game. Like, I understand how to hold a gun and shoot things. So no matter how crazy ass the rest of the shit gets, I have that foundation to build on, and that makes it work so fucking well.
Yeah, it's familiar at the very core level.
It's familiar enough in that I know how to play it. I know what I'm doing. Nothing else about it is familiar. I mean, the rest of it is just absolutely fucking awesomely, creatively insane. Like so first of all,
your guy's name is Garcia Hotspur. No, I think that's not, the very
it's first. Garcia fucking Hotspur. And I will carve my name in the back of your demon neck before you die.
So you're saying it has lots of Shakespeare references.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's great. Awesome. So I was trying to get to, we had a discussion last week about Duke Nukem. And I think that we had, you know, both sides of the, we had many sides of the argument here. And there's certainly room for people who dislike and enjoy it and all that kind of stuff. But to me, what stood out about, one of the things that stood out about Shadows of the Damned is that it treads the perfect line of fun and creative and imaginative and silly and not taking itself seriously in a manner that I think we romantically remember the original Duke Nukem 3D doing. Mm-hmm. Because it makes all those jokes and it has fun, but at the same time it doesn't break the wall and where you're just like, well, that was really fucking stupid.
Yeah,
right.
Kind of like how I felt Bulletstorm did a good job of doing.
I still wish I had played that.
Yeah,
I think still haven't played that.
I think you would have
liked it. Copies of the game still exist. You can still play.
We don't have a time machine, Zav.
Damn it.
So the thing of it is that it's difficult to talk about because I really don't want to spoil any of the surprises it throws at you. But you know the catch of the game is that you play Garcia Hotspur, and Garcia is a demon hunter. His weapon that he carries is a demon sidekick skull on a stick, mm-hmm. which apparently originally in the design you were just going to walk around and whack people with this thing, but it turns into three different forms of guns for you, which basically are analogous to a high power pistol, a machine gun, and like a grenade launcher, and they get upgrades. There's a surprising amount of fundamental game mechanic to it. Mm-hmm. There's a great upgrade system. You acquire gems, and by acquiring gems you're able to upgrade different facets of both Garcia and his weapons. So there's like trade-offs. It's like, okay, do I want to have more health bar right now? Or do I want to have a gun that does more damage? Or do I have a gun that reloads faster? Or do I want to have bigger bullets for my grenade launcher? It's like all these different things to decide, how am I playing the game? How do I want to play the game? And at the same time, they do this deal also with Light and Dark. I don't know if you followed this at all, but when you go to... Well, so I guess I should back up and finish the explanation. So Garcia is a demon hunter. And the demons are pissed off at him because he's been killing so many demons. So they go and steal his girlfriend.
Right.
And they take it, and the Lord of the Demons drags his girlfriend to his castle in hell. And so, of course, he's going to go on a road trip to hell. And basically, it becomes they said it was going to be, it's one thing to say it's going to be a grindhouse movie. I would love to see Rodriguez and Tarantino sit down and watch this thing and like get their reaction, because I would think that they would be like, wow, this is our next movie. This is it. This is our next movie. It's fucking crazy. So when he goes to hell, there's this light and dark world element to it. And the darkness is detrimental to humans. It'll kill him if he's in it for very long. So he has to get through the darkness or get the darkness solved fairly quickly. One of the things they explain very early on, and I like this explanation, it's really funny. His sidekick, who's, by the way, his name is Johnson.
Johnson.
Yeah, they make that joke a lot. In the pistol he turns into, it's a boner. So yeah.
Okay, well, we got a frame of reference for the mentality.
He also gets the hot. He also gets to come.
Why does Garnet Lee like this game?
Dude, are you kidding me? I get to blast my hot boner all over the game world. It's fantastic.
Does the dark world drag down like Metroid Prime 2's dark sections dragged the game down? Does that make sense?
No, actually, I would say that of the games I played, this game does a fantastic job with this idea of a danger zone, being the dark Nerea and then the light that controls it, they have a number of different mechanisms that they use for controlling it. Very early on, you get the basic one of, okay, the darkness comes, you find the goat head, you shoot it with your light shot, that brings the light back. But there are another...
Of course.
That's the way it works for everybody,
what else are you gonna
right?
do with your goat head, dude?
But there are a number of different ways they play around with it. There are a couple of mechanisms they include to like temporarily add light and disperse the darkness, sometimes for an entire area, sometimes for an area just around you. There are ways to fight darkness creatures, and sometimes the darkness creatures have to have the darkness removed from them before you fight them. I'm trying not to, you know, give away. There's so many cool things they do with light and dark. Trust me, like there's really great things they do. There are times that even though that you know darkness is dangerous to you, they create situations where you have to allow the darkness to happen because they're enemies you can only damage in darkness.
Oh, that's cool.
And so you have to bring the darkness in, and then you have to sort of like keep in the back of your head, okay, how long am I going to let the darkness happen and be able to damage this? And then when I want to bring the light back, and then I have to start over in that process, they use that in the boss battles. I mean, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, but one of the carryovers of the Eastern sort of Japanese design to it is that it has a number of boss battles. And the boss battles are all very much of that, figure out the trick behind this boss, and then figure out how to use whatever's in the environment to beat him. And those are moderately successful. You know, there's only so many times you can try and figure out what spot on a thing you shoot and how to get to this right spot to shoot it before you're like, okay, well, I've done this. I mean, but you know, that's my personal opinion. We've had this discussion about many other games. This is not in any way unique to Shadows of the Damned. You know, there's a lot of first person shooters that put bosses in. I find in almost every case, doing a boss in a first person shooter is very difficult to make it work, because in a first person shooter, the fun of the game is all the enemies you're fighting, right, all the tactical environments you get into, and you know, just the experience of being in the world. And then you get into like these boss fights, and they have to constrain the environment. They have to like put you into a situation that's
make
very,
it arbitrarily
yeah.
harder.
And it's unique, and it starts breaking rules, and then they got to be ways that you could bring in, you know. So thinking about these bosses, there would have to be, in my mind, ways that you could bring in the cool parts that you wanted to with the interaction in light and dark, or the vulnerabilities to different weapons and that sort of thing, and bring them into the way the end of the level works without necessarily having to have the silly boss that you follow around a fountain in a circle.
Yeah.
You know, that part just gets...
I agree.
It gets old and tired to me. What else about Shadows of the Damned? You should play it. It's awesome.
I'm going to.
It's...
You've sold me, sir.
The thing that I think is really funny about that game is it's quirky while it's also being really disgusting and gross. I mean, like, you look at, I mean, one thing is, one of the major enemies in the game is this guy who chases you around who just looks like a person's been turned inside out, and he looks
which is
gross.
A great explanation, and they explain everything,
right.
It's amazing,
they explain everything, and don't ruin the explanation.
Is that what happened?
But the explanation is actually hilarious, and when you play the game, but his name is George. Like, it's just like there's just this other layer nope. of what? Like, it's already really strange, oh. and then it has this other
and
layer.
And they're
that I
so
think is great
at doing these little detail things. So for yeah. another thing that comes up is, like, I've come across three of these wacky ass storybooks that are literally like Mother Goose tales that are sitting on pedestals in a room, and you walk in and you read these stories, and they provide, like, one of them provides some of the story about, you're like, these are fucking, and they're all really hilarious, and they're really well put together. And they're like, it just makes you think, wow, that's the attention to, you know, getting your creative detail and your whimsy.
Yeah.
Even if it's bloody, crazy, weirdo.
Dark whimsy nonetheless.
Getting it right. It like sells it yeah. so well.
It is weird to hear Garnett laughing hysterically at his desk and then look at his monitor, and it's like people being blown and like dudes turned inside out, women screaming. It's strange.
It's amazing. It's,
but he said bone.
So here's one of the things that also gets to me. This is one of those deals, right? This is honestly one of the most fun times I've had playing a game in a long while, except for a couple of times when they, I don't know, it's like they just... Sometimes you wonder, like, did someone play this? Like, did
yeah.
anyone? There's one thing that happens later on in the game a couple of times where there's an instant kill situation where you're being chased.
Oh, and they instant kill you?
Yes. And it's really difficult in a third-person game. This is a third-person shooter game, so the camera's pulled in pretty close. You don't have a lot of peripheral awareness. It's really difficult to be, you know, sensory, to have that sensory awareness of where the chaser is when they're behind you,
yeah,
and you're trying to run away.
Oh yeah.
And there's no game mechanic to dodging or trying to stay out of their way. It's a simple matter of, if they get within X range of you, then an animation happens and you die and you start over.
Dumb.
And that's...
Yeah, it seems like a simple camera shift. I mean, other games have done things like that, where they pull it around to the, you know, front three quarter a little bit.
Maybe.
And you can see it.
Or maybe just don't do it.
Yeah,
don't. There's so many other fun parts of the game. It's so unnecessary.
That might be an interesting discussion for another time, of games that you adore that there are sections in the game that you would never want to play ever again.
Infamous 2?
Yeah. Well, no,
tell me about the mouse.
Before you go to Infamous 2, there's one other thing that we're going to hit on, because we're going to talk about these designers in the third segment. Is Akira Yamaoko's music in this game is fucking incredible. It is so good. Hmm. The opening sequence is like this crazy silhouetted, dark, evil-looking woods with a nylon string Spanish guitar played over the top of it that's just incredibly cool. Awesomely atmospheric. And then you get into the game and it's that fantastic, awesome, heavy, crunchy rock guitar. This is the same guy who did Silent Hill 2's soundtrack, so yeah. I mean, you know where that's coming from. Just such incredible music. They already put on their Twitter feed that the official soundtrack will be out in August, and I'm super excited about that. And I think, if I remember correctly, it said something like they did 200 tracks.
Whoa.
I can't imagine. I mean, maybe there's like outtakes and stuff in there, but dude, I am so day one on that soundtrack. It is ridiculous how awesome it is.
So I wonder if that means right now all the listeners are like, I'm not going to like that soundtrack.
Oh man.
If it gets the Mr. Lee stamp of approval, everyone else is like, ugh, I'm just kidding.
Look, this soundtrack is not house music. This soundtrack is just pure fucking video game music. Awesome. Period. Awesome. If you don't like it, you can come take it up with me.
Mailing address followed by...
No. Come to PAX. Okay, take it up with me at PAX.
In person.
Yeah. Hey, how's the music in Infamous 2?
I don't know how the music is in Infamous. So
I've gone deaf.
I need to be very clear with how I start this, because I liked GoldenEye on Wii a lot. We all know that.
You did?
I did.
I'm not sure where he's going starting with GoldenEye on Wii talking about Infamous.
I've also been on record for critiquing open world games, very successful, very good open world games like Red Dead and GTA 4 that have what I thought were problems with them. Mm-hmm. I enjoy Infamous 2 more than I enjoyed Red Dead Redemption. I'm not saying it's better. I'm saying I enjoy it.
Why must we compare the two?
You know exactly why. Well, why must I compare the two? Because they're a similar genre. Okay. That is why. And so Infamous...
What I want to know is, why are you divorcing enjoying a game from how good it is?
Sounds like you're apologizing.
I am not apologizing, and I will defend this one to my death.
So isn't it better if you enjoyed it more?
No, because I think there are different...
It's more fun than it is good.
Yes. It's along those lines. I can respect the art and the higher... What games like Red Dead and L.A. Noire and Heavy Rain do for the genre that I want to see more of, elevating the genre of video games, and I can really respect them for that. But I think it's because Infamous 2 doesn't do all those things. It's not as serious. I don't mind all of its faults. So if you don't know what Infamous, I mean, it's pretty much like Infamous 1. Open world game, you have these electric superpowers. It starts up right after Infamous 1 finishes, and you go to a new city in your, you know, open world game. Missions are highlighted on your map that you go to, and you start a mission and you can wander around the world. But I enjoy the traversal in this game so much. Where other open world games, I feel like GTA, getting around the city was just such a pain in the butt in the car, and the way missions would have to, you'd restart back at the original checkpoint, which Rockstar has gotten better with other releases where you have, you know, mid-mission checkpoints and stuff like that. But Infamous 1 did such a great job of, if you collected a shard, which are like orbs and Crackdown, and scratched that same itch for me, if you failed a mission, you still have that orb already collected. So it doesn't penalize you in that regard. You don't have to go back and start traversal all over again, which I really like. And just getting around the city is fun. Like, to me, that's half the fun of the game, is climbing. It's still the same. You know, you stick on objects. You can't really mess up a climb, but you have more control over it.
I still don't think any game has done it as well as Crackdown 1.
Crackdown 1 was
the most fun traversal of any open world game, I think.
After you got powered up enough, I think it was
fun. Even getting powered up was fun, I thought. Each level of powering up.
So how does it work in Infamous 2? Is it like Assassin's Creed where you just hold a button and he kind of just climbs up walls, or do you have to keep pressing
buttons? You have to keep pressing the jump button to move yourself up, and you can guide where you want to go, but you will stick on platforms or auto-lock on platforms. Okay. But it's not as mindless as and listeners probably maybe haven't had a chance to go hands-on with it, but Uncharted Golden Abyss on the Vita, where you can just trace your line and Nathan Drake then does it.
Right.
It's not autopilot like that. You can still plan your route and have fun and like, oh, can I make this jump? Can I get to this ledge? Can I get this orb or the shard over here? And I really enjoy that aspect of the game. I think the combat is a lot of fun. It's, you know, standard weapons, all electricity-based, like grenades and, you know, lightning bolts that are like a single shot, and then right. You get a rocket launcher and you have a force push, all stuff that was standard in Infamous 1. And I think the combat works really well, but the problems with the game that I dismiss because it's not a serious game are, why the fuck do people live in this city? Why is there a movie theater open for business? Why are people in business suits getting in a taxi?
Wait, but isn't this city modeled after New Orleans after the hurricane?
It is. But
so
it's also
too soon, dude. Too soon.
It's people do live in New Orleans, but New Orleans isn't run by a militia. There aren't, and these aren't spoilers because they happen within the first.
You obviously don't know
game.
Anything about the South.
You don't know anything about FEMA.
I do. you're trying to.
I want to know how
mutants in New Orleans terrorizing the civilians.
Well, I haven't been there in a few years.
Did you ever go down to Galveston?
I have been to Galveston. That's not New Orleans.
I want to know how the user created stuff integrates in the main game. How well that is. Does it stick out like a sore thumb? Does it make you feel like? Does it kind of break the suspension of disbelief when you have there's guys who can stack on each other and all of a sudden? And...
Well, so I think it's. I haven't played. Tons of the user-generated levels, but they show up. You have your mini-map, and you can pull up the full map, and they show up. My colors might be wrong here, but I believe they're green or yellow beacons on your map. So you can clearly see which ones.
You can
ones.
Avoid them should you choose.
Right, and even if you just happen to walk through them, it's not an auto-start. It's like all the missions I'm playing, it's R, I think, on my control set, but I think it's R1 to start a mission. And so you can see that there's a user-generated mission right there, but you don't have to select it. You can just keep playing and go to your story mission or go to... You know, the developer created side mission, and they don't interfere. The ones I have played that they auto populate in the map are, you know, some of the best, what they feel are the best user generated levels. Mm-hmm. And they've been fun. They feel like, you know, any other side mission that would be in the game, and it adds replayability or it makes the game longer. If you enjoy the basic mechanics of it, it's more of that. Are the ones I've played. Nothing crazy. It's not like Little Big Planet where all of a sudden I'm playing
Pong.
They can do that. They can, but I haven't played those.
Yeah.
They were doing moderation on the front menu board too, right? Where they show you the best mission of
right.
the day and have like a YouTube channel where they're showing you experts, right?
I have not been to the YouTube channel, but
I believe they do.
I believe I remember I believe hearing that.
When you see it in the world, does it give you any idea of what that mission is going to be like? Or do you sort of like, oh, here's a user-generated mission, let me start it up, and it ends up being, you know, random crap?
Well, the ones I haven't played haven't been crap, but it's titled. But yeah, it's not okay. like, you know...
There's no description of it or anything like that?
Not on the ones that I've seen, not that okay. I recall. Not at least that I paid attention to when I just right. started a mission. I was
Who
like,
just thought we'd be
this.
So interested in the user-generated
I think it's
content.
An awesome idea.
I do, too.
I think it's an amazing
I remember when
idea.
They showed it at GDC, and we were all hyped for it, too. I'm just... Yeah. You know, a year ago, when Infamous was pretty popular, I think it was definitely one of the early yeah. sort of quietly popular games for PS3. And, you know, I think we were all interested in, and then we got sidetracked on the character redesign. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, they messed up Cole. We got to get him back. We got the real Cole back. But then, you know, it's just sort of, I think that people would have been more excited about, well, where's the story going to go? What's going to be? Instead, it's like, user-generated content. Tell me about that. Tell me about yeah. that. And it plays back to how much in this sort of modern craft your own superhero open world game, people really just want to go dick around in the world. That's
and
really
that's
what they
the
want to do.
The game does well. The story's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. The good and evil choices are super binary and ridiculous. Like, it doesn't make sense.
That's sad because they made the same mistake in the last game.
But
as
it's,
well.
It, but
it's a fun
it's
playground
fun.
Where you feel like the most powerful dude on the block.
Right. And the missions don't throw that out of the window. A lot of open world games, I feel like you start a mission and suddenly it's like, now you're in the mission world and yeah. you're stuck in this little circle and you're yeah. like, fight, fight, fight. Here, you can run around the whole city if you want, you know, during a boss battle and they'll chase you and the mutants will keep following you and you know you might run into a part of the city that's depowered or whatever, which again, why the fuck is part of the, I know it was in the flood, but where's the real government? And you got the beast tearing. Anyway, the plot doesn't make sense.
That's what the people of New Orleans wanted to know all along. Where's the real government?
Where's the real government?
Where's the real government? You started this conversation by comparing it to, I guess, Red Dead and L.A. Noire because they're the newest, but is Crackdown 2 still a more apt comparison in terms of how the game flows?
Crackdown 1, in the sense that Infamous 2 is good.
Okay. All right. Well, Crackdown 2 is not good.
I didn't think Crackdown 2 was good, but it is. It's similar. I mean, if you played Infamous 1, this game, if you didn't like Infamous 1, this game is not going to change things for you. It's very similar. If you liked Crackdown,
but you get new powers.
You do get new powers, but
whole new set of elements, right?
It's iterative. If that is it, iterative.
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 Yeah, it's
not going to blow you
stuff,
away,
right? It's Infamous 2 Electric Igaloo is what I was calling it.
Right. Well, that happens a little later, and it's not a super spoiler. I think they've shown it.
They have shown it. That's why I was...
But yes.
Yes, they've shown...
I'm going to write that down.
Electric Igaloo. Igaloo? I don't think it's original. I think you stole it from someone.
No,
I
think that's what they call houses in Canada.
When they made that announcement, I...
Wait, do you only get to drink if I make the Canadian joke, or do you get to drink
it? I can make the Canadian jokes all I want. That's
okay.
Cool.
All right, well, you got to talk about the zombie game.
Oh, so
because I want to get to point talking board games.
Christian, do you have anything to sum up on Infamous 2?
The sum up is you should play it. It's a lot of fun, but it does have annoying enemies. Again, I don't know. Quit with the kamikazes. We did it in Serious Sam, and it was fun, and it added pressure. I don't want to have to headshot a guy to get him to blow up before.
And in Serious Sam, you had long vistas, and they come out, you go, and you're like, oh, I got to shoot those guys. I hear them coming.
Yeah.
They have those entrenched as well.
Yeah,
they literally have them entrenched. They introduce them in the second level, like kamikaze things that come at you. You're right; they're almost always annoying as fuck and not fun to play against.
It brings the wrong type of tension to a game, in my opinion.
Yeah, because it's the tension of me snapping the disc in half and throwing out the freaking window. So Project Zomboid is this game. I feel bad because Indie Jeff was telling me about it. And I'm like, I'm going to steal your idea and talk about this game on this episode, dude. And I think he's going to be here next week. So he'll think of another indie game. It's this game by a company called the Indie Stone, small little outfit that's creating this game. Now, it's basically an isometric RPG that takes place during a zombie apocalypse, which we've talked about how I'm really bored with the zombie apocalypse stuff. But this game is really cool. So it starts off and you are in your bedroom and your wife is in bed and she has a broken leg and she's apologizing. And she's saying, I'm sorry that... So you learn that what happened was people broke into your house to steal everything and she got hurt and you weren't there to help her. So you have to go and bandage her up.
Probably at the bar with the guys talking about hockey.
Talking about all those zombies. So you need to bandage her up, and then you have all these decisions you can make. So the whole game is about survival. The only thing you have to really worry about is how long you can last.
You started shaking your head before I audibly giggled.
Really, guys.
I think there's medicine for that now if you're really worried about it.
Do not.
Do they get that in Canada on your free health care plan?
I don't know. I'm sure you know exactly what medicine it is, though.
Anyway,
this game, you're trying to survive. The problem, the thing that's a little sad about this is these guys had a bunch of, like, a leak in their FTP, and someone had... Come on. Really, guys? How old is it? I'm going to check everyone's ID.
How immature is Duke Nukem Forever?
They stole the game before it was supposed to be out. So now you can download the alpha release of the game for free on Shaq. So you can go and download this for free, and you can play it as long as you could survive. And
wait, I don't understand. It was a leak, and then they sort of condoned that?
No, it was a leak. They wanted to release an alpha version of the game, and it leaked before they were going to release it. So then they've now released a version of the game that works better. Okay.
So if you want to get the decent version, come over to Shaq News. We got it in the files.
Shaq News. It's like a 50 megabyte file. It's a small file. And anyway, so you're playing this game. The whole purpose of it is to survive. So you go into your shed, and then you find a hammer and boards, and you can board up your house. And then you can go and explore in houses around your neighborhood and look for food to eat. But if you don't board up your house, people can, like zombies, can break into your house. And so many things can change. So I was playing the game, and I immediately went out to go look for food and to board up my house to get to get items in order to help survive and hole up in the house. And Jeff Mattis was telling me that when he played the game and went back home, he forgot to board up his house again, and a guy came into his house with a shotgun and, like, held you hostage with your wife. And then you can make all these little decisions. So you can, your wife is bleeding. You can decide to bandage her up, or you can smother her with a pillow. You could just decide to take her out of her
misery.
So
the danger in the game isn't necessarily the zombies. It's the other crazy people that are trying to survive along with you.
The danger of the game is everything. The environment itself is poisonous to you. I don't literally mean when you walk around it's poisonous, but there are so many things that are trying to kill you because everyone is trying to survive. So there's a zombie apocalypse happening outside.
But you're not like walking around shooting zombies.
No, I mean you're That's the awesome. First thing that you have is like a little hammer that you can use just to board up the doors. But or you also can use it to like swing at zombies to try to survive if they're attacking you. The entire thing of the game, I mean, the music is amazing. The game looks fantastic. It's a very classic, you know, you said isometric RPG, and Jeff immediately, you know, went crazy for it. And then there's just so many little things that happen. Like you can make food. You can make soup on the stove to feed you and your wife. And if you don't turn off the oven, the house sets on fire. And like if you don't board up the windows,
like
they can
Fortress.
Go through. I've never played that.
Dwarf. Well, it's the kind of thing where it's like it's basically just simulating everything.
Everything that is that happens, there is a consequence.
My house does
or a
not
reaction.
Blow up if I don't well,
leave your oven on.
Yeah, that's well, not.
There's a consequence.
Like you're not trying hard enough.
And reaction to everything that's happening in the world, and it's just one. It's like one of those iPhone games where it's like, how long can you? How many times can you keep jumping? Like, what is that?
Oh yeah, what is that?
Cannonball.
Cannonball. Yeah. So it's all about surviving as long as you possibly can. And this game tracks how many days and hours you could survive. And it's all about staying in your home at night, boarding up your home, and then going out during the day to try to find supplies and keeping you and your wife alive throughout the entire thing.
Sounds like a good plan.
Wow,
it's cool. Check
we will
it out.
Help. We will help you keep alive by giving you a little break here so you can make a sandwich. Because everyone needs to go make a sandwich. And when you come back on the other side, we will talk about. I don't know, all kinds of things. We'll talk about the game designers from Japan we spoke about earlier, some of the 10th anniversaries coming up later in the news. We have Game Critics Awards nominees being announced, all that and more on Weekend Confirmed when we continue.
I want to learn emotion.
Sasha, come here. I just want to say one thing. If we don't get out of this alive, I just want you to know one thing. Your ass looks amazing. Your ass looks amazing.
I want to learn emotion.
Emotion.
I was just making sure that I didn't say something wholly inappropriate.
Your ass looks amazing.
Oh God.
I want to learn emotions.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not proud of myself. No.
The entire city is under siege right now. I do not want to get a drink.
I want
you.
To learn emotion.
Shame.
There are
emotion.
Robots attacking
emotion.
Me.
Emotion.
Why are we talking
emotion.
About that?
Emotion. I want to learn emotion. Emotion. I want to learn.
I do not want to get a drink with you.
I want to learn emotion. Emotion.
I love it when a music break starts off with Jeff rolling his eyes back and just falling back into the chair.
Oh, boy. Good stuff, Del Rio.
You have a future maybe as next Data. You know, I just want to know emotions.
I think that song should be called The Perverted Robot.
The Perverted Robot.
It's called it what? Is it called Ass-mazing?
Ass-mazing. Yeah, well.
Oh my God!
So there you go, Del Rio once again with solid. Hey, so before we do the warning stuff, we didn't talk about Metro. Did you want to talk about Metro, some Mr. Kanata?
We Metro don't have to talk Light? About it a lot. I thought it looked good. The sort of slice that they showed at E3 was very action heavy. Which
so you know
it
wasn't a slice.
Wasn't. Well, the
what it was they
chunk.
Took, yeah, it was what it was they put together a bunch of sections from across the game to create a. Experience that they could run through a demo and show a lot of different stuff in the game.
Right, but it seemed like all that stuff was the action stuff.
Well, yeah, no,
the
it was.
Game is,
right.
The first game
it was
is,
intentional.
Yeah, is very much not a run-and-gun shooter. In fact, the whole time during the demo, I was thinking, boy, he's wasting a lot of his money right now. Because all the bullets
his
in
bullets
the game
are money.
Are money, yeah. But it does look very good.
So they said they're going to return that system as well. And that they're working hard on the engine because, like, one of the characteristics they want to have is that it's still a showpiece for people with high-end PCs.
Yeah.
Although they are going console platform as well, but that they want the engine
to
be...
Yeah, they straight up said, we want this to be the best-looking game on the market when it releases. So it looked very sharp.
Yeah, they're definitely in that ballpark. And are we going to talk about... No, we're not. I don't see it. What do you guys think about the news that came out about Battlefield 3's console frame rate versus its PC version's frame rate? Where they're, you know, they're like talking about on the console we can do 30 frames, but we look great, but we're 30 frames per second.
Yeah.
Problem? Don't care? Not worried?
I don't think most of the audience is going to care. I think people who are jacked about that stuff really are going to be wanting to play it on the PC anyway. So
I'm going to play it on PC. My PC's pimp, so I'm going to be playing on PC.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd notice, honestly. I mean, I think it's going to look great. I trust the team to give me the best possible game that they can make. And if putting tanks in and planes and all this badass shit means that I can only 30 frames per second, I don't know. I'm not a huge...
You'll be able to tell.
You'll be able to tell.
Well, no. I mean, if someone's next to me playing on a badass computer and I'm sitting there on my Xbox, I'll be able to look.
Oh, that looks way better.
But I mean, it won't ruin the experience for me.
If that's the only thing you know,
right?
Like not knowing emotion, then yeah, maybe.
I do not know emotion.
I'm just glad that it's not one of those situations where they're like, "Oh, we're making a console version, guys. Let's not put up this PC version."
Dude, I'm totally excited. Like,
which is what Crytek basically admitted to doing, that they try to make their Crysis 2 a little bit more accessible, and it was probably a mistake.
That's why it's lose-lose for PC developers, I think. If they do this, people are like, oh, what, the console one's GIMP, but then Portal 2 has the word console in a menu, and like, oh, it's just a console port. They don't even optimize for the PC.
So I hear what you're saying, and so then it's going to get into the question of financial success versus creative and artistic success, because you know, Battlefield 3 being a hardcore PC game and them like going for the visuals... the visual fidelity that they're shooting for with the game and then being able to nail it on high-end PC at, you know, the frame rate they want to with the draw distance they want. Right. That's awesome. And if they're saying, hey, you know, we're not going to compromise that just to get a console port done, that's high integrity for them.
Well, if the console port looks even remotely close to what they've been showing us on the PC, at 30 frames per second, it'll I think, be impressive.
Financially, I think this could really blow up in their faces.
You know, a lot of people were worried because if you look at DICE's history with, you know, Battlefield Bad Company, which never came out on PC, and then Bad Company 2, which did, which they didn't release all of the DLC for, people were worried that this would be the same situation. So I think, you know, PC gamers, someone who primarily plays games on his PC, I'm very glad that they're not trying to shoehorn in everything into a console version and then, you know, adding a quick texture pass.
Dude, totally agree. However, what's going to happen now to the, and this, I mean, it's right out there, the Modern Warfare 3 killer, because Modern Warfare 3 is going to be made for console. It's going to be crazy optimized for console.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, arguably could be now... the better performer on console. And I'm saying that as a whole overall picture. Maybe it won't have quite as many bells and whistles in some form of, you know, like volumetric smoke or something like that. However, if it's running super smooth and the gunplay is there and they're able to, I mean, just pedestrian as it might be, what if they just sit around and argue, well, we run at 60 frames per second? They don't.
Which they've already raised the point that it will be 60 frames.
Yeah,
that
they will be 60 frames. But what if they start just banging that drum, like, relentlessly, like, don't let go of it. Just beat the fuck out of it.
Am I the only one who thinks that engine is so old now?
It is.
That engine does not look good. I totally agree.
I don't know about it not looking good. It's old, and we've gotten definitely accustomed to it. They are able to do a lot of things in it. I mean, that demo that they ran, although it's like...
Well, they need you to be able to play an entire level without firing a weapon, so they need to entertain you somehow.
I think the
that was for the form trolls.
The scale is what's impressive. Moving from small indoor environments to large environments seamlessly with that engine is
I just would... I would hate to see DICE get burned because of sticking to their guns and saying we're going to make this a badass PC game and not compromise, and then get burned on the console platform because stupid marketers are able to manipulate it and make it look like they're shitty when just over a decision like that.
You know what I mean? As
sorry, marketers, you're not stupid. For but everyone, just saying in general,
for all of the shackers that are listening, I mean, if you were to release Battlefield 3 and then tell them that it was not going to be a lead platform on PC, that would have been a disaster.
Well, it's the same thing that happened to Call of Duty.
Right. But, I mean, that has shifted focus.
Same thing
that
happened to Fear.
They've gone to where the money is, and, you know, Microsoft and them have a very lucrative deal that gets Microsoft all that DLC first. So, I mean, like, there's, like, one example of why that's that
I think this
that game has gone to console.
Battlefield's last shot – to stay catering to the PC market. If, you know, the console version blows up on them, or if PC people still aren't happy and it doesn't produce, why should they make – I mean, why – I'm not saying it's a good thing for the state of PC gaming, but it's kind of like this is their chance to – we're still doing this badass PC version, and if you guys don't want it to be console-focused and optimized for consoles, like, they need to prove that they can do both worlds, or else, you know, at the end of the day, they'll look at dollars and cents and say, hey, this was a big fucking game, and it didn't sell that well on consoles. Yeah. We got to figure that out.
Yeah, if you bring in your biggest, baddest motherfucker and you still can't make a big win out of it, then
I'm really
tough.
I'm really tired of the days where it's like, oh, let's get a 360 and PS3 version out there, and you know what? Let's sell a couple more units, make a PC version too, whatever. I'm tired of that.
I think we all agree with you about that.
I'm just saying out loud.
Specs aren't necessarily. Well, I guess what I was trying to say that I wouldn't notice is that specs aren't necessarily the most important thing. And I think a company that's done a great job of this recently is Apple. And I know this is a technical the hardware, but like the iPad 2, when they advertise it, mm-hmm. it's thinner, faster, lighter. They don't say with this much RAM and this type of stuff. It's like, hey, it's fun. It's a great experience, whatever. And I think Battlefield 3 for consoles can be the same way. People are getting bogged down in only 30 frames per second, only 720p, blah, blah, blah. It's like if it's still a fun, good, competent experience, who cares?
Yeah, you know, I guess I didn't – let me try this tact again. My concern is that it's a vulnerability mm-hmm. that the marketing for Modern Warfare 3 will take advantage of. It's like they left a flank open. It's like they looked so fucking good up to this point where you're just like, holy shit, this game looks damn amazing. They're going to crush Modern Warfare 3. And then all of a sudden there's like, oh, they've got a big weak spot.
Here's the question that I have. When they advertise the game, what version are they going to be showing?
Well, so far they've shown PC, and I imagine they'll continue to show PC aggressively.
Their Jimmy Fallon render looked really good, though. Did you guys see
it? Yeah,
I did. He looked really realistic. I was like, that looks like Jimmy Fallon playing the game.
There you go. Marketing games is obviously a challenge for a number of titles. And this week, of course, and last week, we've had a couple of really fantastic, you know, resurgent Japanese-designed games in Child of Eden, which we all really enjoyed. Zav, you've been playing that. You didn't talk about that.
We talked about it last.
Well, you could talk about it some more. It's awesome. I love it. You can talk about it as much as you want.
I would say playing it in the office because I was having problems with my Xbox. I got so many people standing near that door. I thought that the whole wall was going to cave in. People were just looking at it.
Actually, you didn't have problems with your Xbox. You had problems with your HDMI cable.
My HDMI cable.
Which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
So that and then Shadows of the Dam has gotten a lot of people talking about whether or not these games can be successful and, you know, how they work their way into the market. And this morning it spilled over onto Twitter when Ryan Payton posed this question. Do names like Mizuguchi, Suda, Mikami, and Yamaoko not generate big buzz anymore? And he followed up real quickly. He said, did they really ever? And immediately Patrick Klepek over at Giant Bomb responded that I don't think they ever did. It was simply a smaller video game industry back then, allowing them to be bigger by comparison. And I got a little riled up right about it. I said, I think it was a little arrogant for us to just, you know, start dismissing them so quickly. And I think maybe we weren't all talking about the same thing, because some of the clarifications Ryan did is that, are these games, Child of Eden, Shadows of the Dam, going to have a snowball's chance in hell of being a financial success? And where do these designers from Japan come into that picture? Do they have any sway anymore? Did they ever have sway? How do they fit into the Western market?
That's a weird group to specify. I mean, I noticed that Peyton didn't mention Kojima.
Well, that's the point. So that's these games. That's these two games. I mean, I think maybe I was trying to think of an analogy. You've got like, is Warren Spector maybe above? Is he like sort of floating in that ether where you're like, oh, it's a Warren Spector game? I mean, maybe not after Disney Mickey, but...
Yeah, you know. No, I don't...
But that's the perfect example, because did it help? Did people buy that game, and it sold well, but did people buy that game because it's a Spectre game?
No. I think they bought it because it's a Disney game.
Right.
Yes.
I think.
The question seems a little strange, because it's like these really odd, quirky games that are kind of niche anyway. Like, do these names attached to it make these games sell better? I think, you know, people look at the mainstream, or people who are going to the store are really going to look at the game first rather than the name on the box. So I think that's kind of a weird question anyway.
It helps marginally, but it's not going to sell the game. I mean, I think the Call of Duty Infinity Ward thing leaving, like we, the games media was all in a buzz, like, oh, it's going to be huge.
Good point.
Buyers didn't care. And then Steven Spielberg's Boom Blocks. There it is. Is a kind of another example of putting a name on a box and like, it's Steven Spielberg. And it's like,
that
was a fun game, but it was Spielberg. I don't think these
Will Wright's Spore.
It wasn't called Will Wright's Spore.
But everyone knew it as Will Wright's
Does
game.
Mom, who goes to the store, knows it's called it's Will Wright's Spore?
Well, if we're talking about the buying decision appeal of these guys' names, then you'd know whether or not it had their name. I mean, it doesn't say... But you're saying
if you knew the name, then
it doesn't say Senji Mikami Suda 51's Shadows of the Dam. I think it should.
That's
a good point too. Maybe it should.
I think it should. I think the whole industry would be better served if
that's a damn good point.
Games were identified like directors are identified for films.
That is a damn good point.
And not to bring up the thing I always bring up, but what does this really well is designer board games. All of them across the board have the dude's name above the title, the designer of the game's name above the
title. Calvin Klein's Formula D.
Right, but how many people design a board game and how many people are involved in that process?
Well,
versus how many people
there is a guy who's a project lead, right? And it's more analogous to a director of a film,
right?
Or, you know, it's a Spike Lee joint, or it's a Quentin Tarantino film, when, you know, those guys have huge teams around them. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be better, the whole industry would be better served if the reason that you can't find one person to put on the name above, on the box is because it was designed by committee. Well, then maybe you shouldn't be designed by committee.
Well, there are some examples of both sides of that. Like Kojima has done a great job. He's probably one person who has branded himself as like a Kojima joint or whatever, where people, it might not say it on the box,
right,
but people know that. And then, so now I'm going to make a counterpoint to that, though. I wonder if this stems from video games coming out of the East and the Japanese culture traditionally of we are a group. It's not one person. It's this team, and we're all going to make this. But then there are examples of committees that have tried to bring, like Sonic Team Presents. And I don't know.
There's a lot of guys out of Japan who are really renowned for their design chops, and we know them by name, especially if you're interested in that realm of game making. I mean, you can probably rattle off a fairly long list of names that isn't just, you know, Nintendo and designers from there. You know, like everyone knows who Yuji Ori is. I mean, well, maybe everyone doesn't. Maybe I'm the problem here.
Well,
I didn't even think of this. Here's where I got frustrated, and why the clarification sort of helped me some is I never even thought about it in terms of sales, because I see those names and I don't think, oh, that game's going to sell a fucking ton. I think, oh my God, this game is going to have the fucking most amazing music. It's going to be crazy, have good combat. It's going to be really imaginative and creative. I think about all the things that having those guys work on it means to me, and it never even crosses my mind as to whether, oh, it's going to sell a billion copies because it says Suda 51 on it.
But is the game being marketed that way? Do people?
No, it's not.
The game is not even being marketed that way anyway. So how does the question even come up if the game's not even being advertised or billed as? I mean, look at a game
that's
like
a good point too.
I wonder if you look at past sales from Alice, American McGee's Alice versus Alice Madness Returns, how it would be different. I mean, it was a cult hit, so the game didn't sell in term like that much to begin with. But I mean, like, that is an example of a game where they used to do that and American McGee's taken his name off of it. Sid Meier's Civilization, does that sell well because it's Sid Meier's name?
Yes. You know? I think.
But I do think that comes. They've done that well, yeah.
I think that I'm going to reiterate my point, and I think that ownership has a twofold benefit to the industry. I think it puts a name and a face for the consumer. It associates a sort of creative force that goes from game to game. I mean, I'd love marketing to be from the people that brought you just like films and television shows and all and other types of media.
They should be doing that. Yeah,
I think that'd be a wonderful connection point to the audience, and it also, I think, engenders creative vision on the creative side. You know, that I think that if someone says, you know, this is my game, or you know, this is the next game from so and so.
But it happens in movies the other way too, where like movies are still made by a committee and they do brand it, though it's like by the studio that brought you Iron Man.
Sure.
Or this is an Activision game. Does
well,
that
the reason
have
they
any...
say the studio that brought you Iron Man in some cases is because no one knows the name of the dude who's actually involved, but the thing that they know the most is peripherally involved.
Well, I mean, a good example of how this happened is, you know, when Gears of War was very popular and they released Unreal Tournament 3, they branded it as a game from the people behind Gears of War, but they didn't say it's a game by Cliff Bleszinski. They went for the brand that people will recognize in the more mainstream of the game that you know already was made by the same people who made this.
But
new
I like
game.
Jeff's argument about owning it and having the personality. And we've talked about this before in the context of like GDC conversations, mm-hmm. where we talk about how, you know, these folks who are game designers, they are doing fantastic stuff. They're very creative folks, and we as an industry have not done a good job of letting them be demonstrative of that outside of our internal circles.
Yeah, I don't know if that, because I remember specifically Warren Spector, you brought him up, was asked about something like this, and he talked about how the reason why he doesn't want his name on a game at the top of the bill is because he thinks that it takes away from the fact that it is such a team effort, specifically in his case.
I get the selflessness, and it's very laudable. At the same time, Quentin Tarantino's Grindhouse had a tremendous number of people involved in it, including a whole other director. However, by making it Quentin Tarantino's Grindhouse to the public face, there were all of a sudden a number of, oh, I know Tarantino. I know what this will be like. I have an idea what this will be like. Jeff said you said that movie wasn't actually successful, but
well, I think that it also it ceases to become this sort of faceless product and more this creative venture that it has authorship. There's authorship associated with it, you know. And I think that is a different paradigm for the way most consumers would even approach the medium.
I think we have it. It's just at the developer level where it's Insomniac will be debuting a new multi-platform game at E3, which is what happened. Or what's the next game from Bungie? Even though a lot of those Bungie guys now, or not a lot, but some are at different places, but it's Bungie's next project. And I think that kind of stuff permeates out to...
It's nice to see some of that identity building element.
Or Double Fine, which we already talked about, where...
They've done an excellent job. I like the idea. Now you said that, I like the idea of, you know, having identities within even a studio where, you know, for instance, like Q Games has the Pixel Junk brand, and you see the Pixel Junk brand and you have an idea of what that's going to be: PSN downloadable game, creative art style, you know, take a basic game concept but like turn it on its ear a little bit and give it a creative twist that makes it new and fresh. So you like that's that authorship element. Like same thing as like saying it's a Tarantino flick. So you get this idea that it's going to be like jump cut and it's going to have like characters coming in and out. The timeline's not going to necessarily be uniform. It's got a lot of great action in it, little quirkiness, and you're going to have a good time with it. You start to film those, you know, form those ideas in your head, and I think that that's valuable. And again, so now move over, coming to Shadows of the Damned, like Christian, you even said it, like that's a you felt it wasn't a good title for the game even because you keep getting it just like lost.
It's very generic. And I don't know, it doesn't encapsulate all what this game is or can be. And to answer the initial question, will it be a commercial success? I unfortunately don't think so.
So
I think,
even if you didn't know them by name, would it not at least spark some curiosity if it said Suda 51 and Shinji Mikami present Shadows of the Damned?
I think that would be awesome. I think that more games should be marketed that way, should be framed in that context. I think that'd be awesome.
I mean, is there an implied idea of even that, hey, I may not know these names, but fuck, obviously I should, because
exactly.
They're big enough that they're on the title. Maybe I should just take 2 seconds to figure out who the hell these guys are.
Haven't we already proved that that's not the case with Steven Spielberg's name on Boom Blocks and it didn't sell?
I don't know. I'm not really thinking
maybe
about
we recognize,
this in terms of...
Maybe we recognize Spielberg as someone from another field and say, oh, that's not that big a deal.
I think it's, within this room, it's a cool idea because we want to see that, like...
I mean, did you care about Sammy Hagar's buying Tequila Company, like Sammy Hagar's Cabo Wabo?
There's a lot of like comparing it to this and that. Like speaking of it specifically to this, I think that, you know, a good game does not mean it's going to sell well. I mean, look at Platinum's back catalog of games, you know what I mean?
I think they
take a lot of chances, and that's why some people think of it as just strange titles, so they don't pay attention to them. I don't know whether or not, you know, attaching a name is going to do a much better job of just showing people what the game is like, you know, releasing a demo, showing, you know, actual gameplay in trailers rather than CG, you know, doing magazine covers. It all comes back to marketing. I think it's a very cool idea by putting a name on it that we can recognize attach something to it.
If the question at the start of this whole conversation is, do people care about who makes games? Then the answer to that, in my perspective, is we have to make the people who make games important for people to care about them. Mm-hmm. And the way you do that is you attach names to games. You make the discussion about who made these games, that it is a creative vision of one or two people, that these games are guided in a large sense by one person's creative voice. And if that's not the case, then that's not the case. But if if it is the case, it should be. I think it should be celebrated in front and center. I think it would benefit the industry.
Maybe I'm grasping some, but in a world, in a, you know, a climate right now of a number of super franchises with very ever escalating numbers at the end of their titles, anything that we can come up with to try and give these creative folks an ability to market what their creative vision is after they've had it and get it out there where people will just be interested in it. God, just at least give it the time of day so that they can like get it in front of them and not just be like, well, I'm going to go buy another Modern Warfare and I'm going to go buy another.
That's the more salient point right there that you're making, is that what's king now is franchise.
Yeah.
And not creator. And
so if we can just give them a little, you know, maybe, like I said, maybe it's grasping at straws. Maybe there's another way to do it. Maybe it's through the studio. Maybe it's through some other vehicle, but something so that maybe it's something like the independent studios of the film industry, you know, where you start to get like Amblin Entertainment and that sort of thing. You're like, oh, like, because they started to develop like voices as well. Maybe it's something like that. I don't know, but something.
Well, a great so comparison,
creative people can get out.
A great comparison is the comic book industry. I mean, the comic book industry had fell prey to the same thing where franchise was king, and there's 47 Spider-Man books and 38 Batman books and 406 X-Men books, and then it all crumbled. And the way that the comic book industry has scraped back is starting putting creators' names on the cover. You know, this is the team, this is the writer, this is the artist, and those people have authorship. And I think it frames it in a different context for the consumer and for the creator both.
Hey, so. does that mean we can make it Garnet Lee's Weekend Confirmed?
Yes.
Oh, that was a shitty thing to say. I'm sorry. Just play.
It's your goddamn show.
I shouldn't have said that. That was a shitty thing to say. Strange James 85. Speaking about games and big franchises, this is going to be an incredible 10th year anniversary for a number of games outside of Halo. Some of the ones that he rattled off here very quickly: Metal Gear Solid 2, Grand Theft Auto 3, Halo. Of course, we already had Final Fantasy 10, Paper Mario, Jax and Daxter, Rez, Max Payne, Dead or Alive 3, Advance Wars, Golden Sun, Eco, Silent Hill 2, which many think is the best of the Silent Hills, Devil May Cry, Pikmin, SSX Tricky, Civ 3, Phantasy Star Online, Conker's Bad Friday, Black and White, and as casual as it could be, Bejeweled, 10 years old.
Wow. Is that a golden age of gaming?
That's pretty
crazy.
Stunning list of games there. It says a lot of major trends we see in gaming today were developed or at least perfected and showcased in games that came out in 2001. How in retrospect, so here we go with their talking points for you guys. How in retrospect do you feel about the landmark games that came out 10 years ago? Can we look at 2001 as a landmark year that changed gaming? And have we had a single year with as much innovation or at least as many major games since? We're getting HD remakes of these games at some point, you know, Eco, Halo, Metal Gear Solid 2. Should the 10th anniversary of these games be celebrated? And if so, which ones and how would you like to see companies handle them?
I would like
a lot
to see
chew on.
A touring symphony show. That's what they're doing for Zelda.
I am.
Well, you made the point, and I'd
see that list.
Forgive if it was in one of the, maybe it was mentioned in some of the video pieces you guys did at E3, but I mean, should it be celebrated? Yes. And is it? It is, in the sense that Microsoft's press conference this year could have easily been 2001's in terms of what games are they showing. It's all those games except minus, you know, Grand Theft Auto 5 hasn't been announced yet.
I was on the negative side of they're not doing anything creative.
Right. But that gives credence to how important that list of games was.
Definitely.
And what Mr. David Ellis pointed out as we were chatting over anniversary is it's crazy to think how well those games do hold up versus it was released in May 22nd, 2000, but Perfect Dark on the Nintendo 64 came out within the same calendar year, I mean, not calendar years, a 12-month span of Halo 1, and comparing how well that game has held up today versus other games that were released around the same time raises those good games' importance so much higher. GTA 3... still very fun and very playable. And so those games on those lists are incredible.
Well, I mean, you can definitely make an argument that GTA 3 was a watershed game.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, the prior Grand Thefts had been interesting, but
started
a genre in the isometric view, but like going into GTA 3.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So GTA 3 started a genre. Open world was created with GTA 3, I think. No?
Popularized, at least. At the very least, popularized.
Modernized.
Yeah, probably be proven wrong.
That's why we have that.
Well, these games are being celebrated because we are getting these HD collections. I think that's a really cool thing. I cannot wait to play some of the stuff like
I'm
Metal Gear.
A little torn on this front. because we start to get caught up in reliving past glories, and there's a place for that, and that's great. And you know, I was happy to see, you know, something like the Battlestar Galactica reimagining. That was really, we all enjoyed that until the last season. And you can do a little bit of that, but how many of them do we really need?
But you know, you're talking about what a 12-year-old kid was two.
So go back and play them. They still play quite well. And as a matter of fact, playing them in their original state is in many ways arguably the way to play them.
But impractical.
Okay,
and...
How's impractical?
I'm just going to call bullshit because I know you're going to be there day one when Eco and Shadow of Colossus comes out.
But I already played the originals. I got to pass.
Well, you're not going to play it?
I don't know if the original is.
No,
the
I'm
way
totally
to
going
to
play them, but
so
I got to pass.
What is your argument then? Your argument is that do we need these, but you're still going to go out and buy
them? So
maybe
Eco and Shadow of the Colossus stand at a spot to do that. Do I need a Max Payne remake?
But if
do
you,
I need a Grand Theft Auto 3 remake?
You need Eco and Shadow of Colossus because you love that game. Someone else might love Max Payne. Maybe they really want that remake. You know what I'm saying?
I don't really care.
I'm trying to have the discussion.
I don't think the original.
I see where you're coming from.
I want a new black and white.
I will throw myself under the bus here. Then maybe Eco and Shadow of the Colossus don't necessarily have to have a remake because they were great games in their space. And if we could just find a way, I'd be perfectly happy if I could just play Shadow of the Colossus on a modern machine and it didn't have some frame rate issues and played well.
If it was a remake?
No, dude, come on. It doesn't take anything away from it to have up-res textures and look pretty and shiny.
The only thing I'm kind of thinking of,
there's a
finite number of games that we can consume in a year and games that can be made and a finite amount of creative talent that's out there. And I just don't know how much of it. I mean, I'd rather see some what would these folks who are so inspired by these games, what could they do if they were just off doing their own thing?
Well, you think the same people that would be creating a brand new game are the guys that are up-resing the textures on old games?
It's funny you say that, but if you look at Sly Cooper, the guys who up-res it are the guys who are working on the brand new game.
Well, that's there you true. Go. That just I mean, disproves Garnet's
right.
argument.
But my thing, the thing that Jeff says that I think is actually the best point of this whole thing is there are a lot of people who have never played these games that you're reintroducing some of this stuff to a whole collection of gamers that were not there at this point, this entry point. People who haven't played the original Halo on the original Xbox, or Beyond Good and Evil HD, which did not sell well, but they up-res it. Now it's available, downloadable. It's coming out next week on PSN. That stuff is, I think, the best part of it, that introduces these games and these franchises that are still continuing to this day to people who were not around or very young when they were first released.
We try to introduce you to some new music every week, and today it comes from the Felix Culpa, who, I'm a computer. It's actually not his band. It's his friend's band. That's good enough. We're good. They're a progressive indie band with a post-hardcore element to them. This is The Constant.
Peace.
Constant from Felix Culpa, which you can get more information from in the show notes on shacknews.com, which is where you should come anyway, so you can join us in the comments, discuss today's show, everything we've talked about from the games to our prior discussion about celebrating old games, which we had a little, the discussion rolled right over into the break. Christian was like, no, you can't play, or you shouldn't play the old games in their old forms.
Well, so yeah, what I was trying to say is that the original way isn't necessarily the way to play them. I think we remember them as looking better than they looked. Like when I saw Halo Anniversary at first, I was like, well, yeah, that's how Halo looked. But then they switched back to how it really looked, and you're like, oh my God, that looks so much better. But you remember it as that first
that's
experience.
That's why that feature's there.
I think it is.
It is.
And when you played Halo when it was first out, you're like, this is amazing. This looks so groundbreaking. And when you're playing Shadow of the Colossus for the first time, you didn't notice all the stuttering. But if you went back and played it now, it's like, like a newer version.
They're no longer shackled by their technology.
Right, and don't change what worked, but just, let the technology complete the vision. And for new gamers coming into it, I think that's the way to experience it. They're not adding, CG dancers in Jabba's lair or something like that,
I think now they're
Not changing who shot first.
Right.
I think now they're
changing.
It's
always the player.
I think now it's catching up to our imaginations. Which I think is really cool about those HD remakes.
Not mine, dude. My imagination is the fucking holodeck.
Flying car with lasers?
The holodeck. Until we get to the holodeck, I need a new console. Until the console is the holodeck, I need a new console. So all you people who are like, oh yeah, the graphics are good enough. Is it the holodeck? I need a new console.
New console.
All right, then. So without further ado, let us hop into the news. We still don't have a news jingle for Zav. I'm sort of sad. I think we should redouble our efforts now that it's in the summer to get a news jingle for him.
I think we should throw it out to the audience and have them
try again.
Yeah.
If you would like to make a news jingle.
I'm trying to rhyme tomatoes like with make... the news that matos. Something.
Tomatoes.
Tomatoes.
Oh, awesome. I didn't hear that in grade school. Moving on to the news. Long-delayed Ghost Recon Future Soldier beta is still Xbox 360 exclusive. If you remember, jump into your Wayback Machine with me for a second. There you go. Oh, God. Speaking of Ubisoft.
Mr. Caffeine bringing you back.
Remember all these great jokes from 1996? No? Let's do them anyway.
Did you see Jamie Kennedy getting catty about that on Twitter?
Really?
Yeah, like someone was like saying like Pachter and someone else were making fun of like the worst E3 presentation.
Oh yeah, his for Activision. Yes. Oh sweet Lord, that was.
And
terrible.
He was like, "You dorks clearly don't know what you're talking about." I'm like, "Yeah, they're dorks. Yeah. Sure, way to go, big man."
Ironically, I haven't seen Jamie Kennedy in a movie in a long time. So, moving on. If you remember, back in 2010, before Splinter Cell Conviction came out, Microsoft and Ubisoft announced a promotion where if you purchase Conviction, you'd get a beta invite for Ghost Recon Future Soldier. At that time, Ghost Recon Future Soldier was supposed to come out in the holiday season 2010. Fast forward to now, Future Soldier still not out, not coming out until 2012, and the beta that is exclusive to 360 in 2010, still exclusive to the console, and if you want to get into the beta,
you still have to buy Splinter Cell.
You still have to have Conviction. Now, they are going to have other ways to get into the beta. They've given away some codes through, I think at PAX, they did like a dog tag thing. But the thing that's funny is by the time that Ghost Recon's beta is available for people, Splinter Cell would have been in stores for 2 years.
What's your point?
My point is,
do you think Project $10
there was a trade-off.
Works?
There was a trade-off. PlayStation got the Assassin's Creed Brotherhood beta, and Microsoft got the Ghost Recon beta. Not only is the Brotherhood beta finished, a new game has been demoed, detailed, discussed in the Assassin's Creed franchise.
I wonder if the Splinter Cell Conviction HD remake will come out.
I think the Ghost Recon Future Soldier HD remake might come out first, if that's even possible.
Which game would it look like? Would it look like the one they originally showed? Or the one
that's another thing. Is the game is? Did you see the game when it was first announced?
Oh, yeah.
In 2010. Totally different now. Looks completely different. Now it looks a lot like Army of Two.
Stuff happens. The future changes.
Army 2, that's tough.
I'm not saying that that's a bad. I'm just saying the style of it is a little Army of Two ish. The way that the guys are running around the room, whatever. Mm. The room. They've had rooms. So we talked about this last week, that Batman Arkham Asylum was going to get some DLC that allowed you to play as Robin in challenge modes. It was a rumor at the time. It has since been confirmed. Warner Brothers says that in order to get these challenge maps, you need to pre-order the game at Best Buy in North America. However, I talked to someone at Warner, and they told Shaq News that DLC will eventually come out for everyone to pick up. They didn't say whether or not it's going to be premium or free. My guess is that it's going to be premium, and you will be able to play those Robin maps. So
fear not, Robin fans.
Timed exclusive, and it's not platform exclusive, which is what they did with the DLC for the Joker maps on the PlayStation 3. So if you want to play as Robin, did you see the images of Robin?
It
looks like Eminem.
He looks like Cole from Infamous.
He does, and he looks like Commander Shepard, and he looks like the guy from Red Faction, and he looks like other bald space marine dudes.
Does he?
He looks like Chris O'Donnell.
There's like a McDonald's.
Jeff is dying to say something here.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, it's not fun when I don't just pop it in. I was going to say, a holy future soldier, Batman.
All right. I kind of ruined it for you.
You did.
I just want to say that's what she said.
Last week, if you remember, maybe we talked about it for a minute or two. Duke Nukem Forever has been released on the PC, Xbox 360, and PS3. The Take-Two CEO has actually promised that franchise has not been put on the shelf. Gearbox does own the IP, but they have a very strong relationship with Take-Two. They've published two of their games now, Duke Nukem and Borderlands.
Is that a promise or a threat?
They said that the franchise is now in Gearbox's hands, so a new game in the franchise should be expected.
2047.
That was the joke that I think some people have made in the comments as well. And also, he did make a comment about the reaction and the critical reaction to the game based purely on its content of it, whether or not it's made for adults or, children purchasing this game, obviously. He stressed, obviously, the game is rated M for mature, and like Red Dead Redemption, another game that they've published, it's not marketed to children. He said, and this is a quote, when we put something out, I stand by it. I do not compromise. What is there left to say? I'm sorry if you don't like it. Don't consume it. Which is true.
You know, obviously. Other than putting them on the box of cereal, and, you know, it wasn't marketed to children at all.
All those Band-Aids and Duke Nukem vitamins. Oh, man.
You might have seen him on Saturday morning cartoons, but he's not there for the kids.
Hey, Portal 2. Remember that game, guys? I think we talked about it a few times. Sold like hotcakes. 3 million units. Gabe Newell mentioned it at a Games for Change event in New York City, casually mentioning, throwing out there that Portal 2 has sold 3 million units across all platforms. He didn't really detail the sales statistics versus PC and console, obviously. But that's a pretty big accomplishment for a game that started off as a franchise awesome. That started off as a quick little bonus.
He's like 1 million shy of the total sales for Portal already. Boom. Done. And that's before they'd like to do sales or bring it back with DLC or do anything to incentivize it again. Crazy.
Couldn't happen to a nicer game.
Congrats, guys. Great game. Great sales. Fantastic.
I do like this quote from Andrew Yoon on Shaq News, who said, with all that money made from Portal 2, Valve will finally be able to complete development on Half-Life 2 Episode 3. That's how it works, right, guys?
Right.
Right.
That makes me sad because, you know, Valve is going to be at Gamescom, and they've said they're going to show a game.
Left 4 Dead 3.
Well, actually, everybody thinks now it's going to be their free-to-play because, you know, they just turned on free-to-play games on Steam, And so the supposition now is that it's going to be some sort of free-to-play game, and then it could well
could be Dota.
That's the thing, is a lot of people are thinking it's going to be maybe Dota 2, which right. maybe they're going to like model Dota 2 under the free-to-play model and have that. And Dota 2 would be a perfect spot to show it at Gamescom, but god damn, I want to see episode 3.
I think they really need to get Dota out there because there's still some conflict over the name itself. There's some legal issues, I think, that have come up because of that name that they've selected for the game.
I got issues over episode 3. I just need it.
In your eye holes?
Yes.
Put in your eye holes. Speaking of eye holes, Crysis 2, we talked a little bit about how the game has been was made more accessible for people on PC. Now is finally going to get a DirectX 11 DLC pack, an ultra upgrade pack. So if you have a machine that can handle DX 11, the game...
Which you do.
Which I do. The game looks a lot better. There was a NeoGAF thread where they did a comparison shot of what it looks like with tessellation turned on and off and dynamic lighting turned on and off. And it looks remarkably better, obviously. But that game was already beautiful.
And really good. It bums me out how that game is not in the discussion of one of the best shooters already of the year.
I can't say anything. I didn't play it.
It is phenomenal. I know my word, but it's good.
No, I did the review, and I really liked it.
Awesome.
You know. So, yeah, if you have a PC and you really want to push it to its limit like the original Crysis did, then make sure to check that out on Monday. It's going to be released for free for you can.
Props to the Crytek guys for bringing it back and getting back on the, like, okay, we can push. We know, by the way, we know how to push a PC really hard. What yeah. were we thinking?
They talked a little bit about that. There was a story from somewhere, I can't remember, where the CEO was talking about how they maybe made a mistake by making it a little bit more accessible and not pushing the envelope, so they're trying to correct that by releasing this pack.
Proppers.
Speaking of the PC, L.A. Noire has been announced to come out for the PC this fall. Rockstar made the announcement today on Thursday that Rockstar Leeds is going to do the PS3 port, so the PC port of the game, which is interesting because Red Dead Redemption, still not out on the PC, still never announced for the PC. The game sold so well that you'd think they'd want to do it.
How many gamers, and this maybe just my ignorance, are PC-only gamers? Are people waiting for this game to come out? I can understand games like Crysis 2 where you know, traditionally better on PC, or like Battlefield, you want to play that on PC.
I think you'd be surprised.
Yeah, especially if you visit Shaq News. That community,
I mean, look
loves
at Mass Effect.
The PC.
Our community does love the PC. Our community also plays on a number of platforms. So I think that maybe Christian's point is that,
but they would wait this long.
Would they wait?
Well, no, I mean, specifically whenever we write stories about like Noir or Red Dead Redemption, people are like, not on PC. I don't care. You know,
I
people
think,
get upset about.
Well, that's the vocal minority.
Right,
always
of
is vocal. And no insult to you guys who are that way, because I certainly appreciate it. I'm just saying that in the bigger scheme of things, there's so many of us that have multiple consoles. I think maybe the appeal is that L.A. Noir really gravitates towards, god damn it, Dylan, if you're listening, I'm so pissed that all I can think of every time I see the damn title for that game now is La Noire. God, it's driving me nuts. I think that the deal is it's more adventure game like, which I think has a built-in tie back to the PC crowd. And so they think, oh, L.A. Noire, I don't have to do all the side stuff. It's very PC. It's a very adventure game sort of game. Whereas Red Dead really was an action game. It's really suited to playing well on the controller. I don't know how well even the horseback and everything would have translated to mouse and keyboard. It would have been a lot of experimentation and work to do there. Whereas here, this is like just a natural glove fit of, oh, it's an adventure game.
I think it will fit the platform well and be great on it. I'm just curious, people that were jazzed for the game that will wait when it's not even, when it comes out, you don't even know if it's going to come to your console, I mean, come to your system, come to the PC.
That's
and be fair. Like, oh, I'll just hopefully, if no, no PC, no play.
Yeah.
Like,
well, the big difference here is that the game just came out 2 months ago, came out in May, actually,
yeah.
So a month ago. And they announced a month later that it's coming out on PC. Whereas, like, Red Dead, obviously, if they announce it now, I think that would be more to what you're saying.
Be a bit lost.
A couple of other announcements. If you're going to Comic-Con, Dragon Age 2's DLC pack, a major DLC pack that's coming out, and Mass Effect 3 are both going to be playable there at BioWare's booth. You're going to Comic-Con,
I will be
right?
at Comic-Con.
Do you have 60 free hours for Dragon Age?
You have to play the entire game.
Yes, it's great. It's quite a demo.
Bring your save files.
If anybody is going to Comic-Con, though, there's an awesome panel Friday night at 8 o'clock in room 7AB. Just saying. Totally Red Show panel.
Very coded, if you didn't catch the hint.
TotallyRadShow.com.
That's right.
Is it TotallyRadShow or TheTotallyRadShow.com?
No, the.
Okay.
It's just a Totally Rad
Show. Do I have to type in www? I don't know how the internet works. So Fallout 3, the third DLC pack for, Fallout New Vegas, is coming out on July 19th for all platforms. Red Orchestra, I'm going through quick announcements here. Red Orchestra 2 coming out in August for PC players. And also, as of June 22nd, 15 years ago to the day, Quake was released on PC. 15-year anniversary of Quake.
Far out.
Which
you would have known
Shatters,
that if you watched the Totally Red Show's This Day in Red.
We did the Totally Red Show?
Is it The Totally
it's just
Red
a...
Show? Is it www.thetotallyredshow?
Would you say that show's rad?
A lot of rad in that show.
Obviously, if you are listening and you're a Shacker, you know that there's a big history with... I mean, Shack News used to be called Quakeholio.com. It wasn't always ShackNews.com. So Quake has a big part of the Shack history, so I think it was important for us to mention that Quake, 15 years old.
Set your CVARs. There you go.
And the last thing I think maybe you should take a handle on is this Game Critics nomination.
Yeah, critic, you.
You mean as a voting judge, I can provide some
insight.
I can provide insight into like the directions that we got on it, and we can talk about the awards. Like we were talking about in the pre-show, one of the things that the thing behind the Game Critics Awards is that it spans a number of publications, and it's a good spectrum of voices that are included in it, from hardcore sites to old school magazines to, you know, more popular mainstream cultural things like Entertainment Weekly. And across that broad spectrum, you have a lot of, you know, folks who've been doing this for a long time and have a good background in looking at games. And one of the things that Jeff and Rob, who organize it, try to, I think, really bring out is the ability for us to not feel caged in when we're assessing, you know, like when we're looking at all the games, and not feeling like forced into, well, I have to put this game into this category or I can't vote for it at all. Now, the downside to that is that because we have an open nomination system in it, it winds up with, it's just really tough. You know, like one of the things that stood out to me, and I hope I have some criticisms, even though I participated. I'll just go ahead and voice them because I always walk out in front of the train anyway.
You are a critic. Criticize away.
Yeah, I'm also like a dumbass who walks in front of trains. I don't understand how Gears of War wound up in action game and Uncharted 3 wound up in action adventure, because to me, they're both third person cover shooters.
Prey 2 is action and not adventure.
Well, but so the loose descriptions that were given of the categories says that action games are first person shooters and action adventure games are third person shooters and third person exploratory games.
Yeah, so how does Gears of War fit into action? It's not a first person shooter.
So all I can say is that I guess because they're not structured, I guess that what happens is that enough of the folks in this group that looked at it associate Gears of War 3 with being a shooter in the vein of first-person shooters, that they voted it into the action category.
I see how...
But I think that's a flaw, a little bit of a flaw in the system.
Uncharted, there's adventuring, there is exploring. In Gears, you never climb up a... You never climb up a cliff and navigate your way around an area. You run forward, you wait for the guitar chord, and then you run forward again. Which is super fun franchise, but there's not adventuring.
So I agree. And I guess that's how that winds up happening. And I get that. And that's part of the way this system works, is that it's honest. It's just the opinions of the critics who are there. And it's not – no one says – well, you know what, Garnet? If you want to vote for Gears, it has to be in this category, but not this category.
They give you free reign to make that selection.
They give you free – you know, we're given free reign to make those decisions, and I guess there's pluses and minuses to that, and it just seems – that's a small thing, but it just seemed, you know –
How come there's five nominees in every category except fighting game?
I have no idea.
Nominees.
I have – because the other thing is I guess there's probably a tie, because when we send in our ballots or our nominations – we send them in weighted form, and so I'm guessing is that two of the games wound up with the exact same score, so there was a weighted tie.
The thing that's funny about that category is wrestling, WWE is in fighting game and not in sports game, but SSX is in sports game, so it's not like sports is specific to simulation.
Well, even more interesting, and this I think has a lot to do with, you know, shows how well maybe the marketing positioning was, is that Undisputed, UFC game, winds up in sports.
And WWE is in fighting.
Winds up in fighting.
Yeah.
Now, granted, we've almost always thought of WWE as a fighting game, you know, all the way back through you know, the original SmackDowns. We've always thought of those basically as fighting games. I always sort of thought of UFC as a fighting game too. although I see where they're coming from as far as it's a simulation of a sport.
But why is SSX in that category then? You see what I'm saying? The thing that stands
out to
me...
Where would you put SSX? Not in a fighting game.
I don't know. The thing that stands out to me, and I don't want to disparage it because I'm really looking forward to the game. Everything I've seen looks great. BioShock Infinite as best original game seems strange just because it's the third game in an established franchise. I know the game is very different and it has original ideas, but you know, I think it... When you look at the rest of the list and it's very small games that try something that's very extremely unique and brand new.
There have been other big name winners in that category. Yeah. I think that it speaks to how strongly the creative vision of Infamous jumped out at a number of people at the show. I mean, there are a number of people like really saw the rifts and the skylines and the interaction with Elizabeth as just something that much like BioShock took shooters past just running around and shooting dudes.
The place where BioShock seems odd to me is best PC game, because I don't think there was anywhere at E3 you could see BioShock running on a PC. Could you? It was all on consoles.
And it's not in best console category.
It's in
best PC but not on best console. It's not on, yeah, it's not listed
it's
as
best,
console.
It's under best of show, and, though, so.
And getting into that, I honestly haven't the foggiest other than that's the way the nominations came in. And I guess it speaks to maybe people still thinking of Irrational and the stuff that Ken does as PC games.
Maybe.
I mean, it was shown played with a controller. Was it running on, did anyone look, was it showing running on a debug?
I could have sworn
it was. I think
they've
always shown it on the Xbox 360, as far as I remember.
You think so?
I think
so. I'm not sure.
I could
of that.
Be
I
mixing it up in my head with something else, but I could have sworn it was actually being played on the 360.
Maybe, but regardless, we know it's a multi-platform SKU.
A fingers True. Crossed that the PC will get the DLC on time, as opposed to BioShock 2, which they had to wait.
Running through really quickly, I think that the best of show, there's no real surprises in best of show. Batman Arkham City, which was, you know, great demo, stunning how well they've translated all the things that made Batman cool at a small level into a large scale game. BioShock Infinite, which we just spoke about. The Elder Scrolls V, Skyrim, Tomb Raider.
Surprise. I think that's a surprise for best of show.
Maybe before we saw the video, but Tomb Raider's video made a huge impact on a lot of people. I'm not a fan. I can tell you that I didn't support it.
I know. I edited
fan.
Your preview. I remember that you're not a fan.
But it obviously won a number of people over. Mm-hmm. And then Uncharted 3, Drake's Deception, which is funny. I almost think that Drake's Deception suffers from a little bit of, well, yeah, we knew. Of course it's going to be. Of course it's going to be awesome. It's going to be super awesome. Thanks. What's something else?
Yeah.
Which is a shame because it's freaking amazing.
And I walked out. I remember walking out of that PlayStation press conference or Sony press conference thinking, I didn't think I could be wowed by Uncharted again, and what they showed, that water
smoking
level,
hot,
unbelievable.
Does the 3 hurt it in its title? Like if it BioShock were called BioShock 3,
there's a 5 right in there
instead of. Oh, well, yeah, but people don't refer to it. Skyrim as Sky. I don't know. There is Elder Scrolls 5, but
I think it's
it
much
just
more what Garnet is talking about, which is sort of like it's obviously great. It's like, oh yeah, of course it's going to be amazing.
I'd buy
Not
more
surprised.
Copies of Uncharted 3 if it was called Arnie Meyer's Uncharted 3.
There you go. Original games, Bastion, which I think...
Awesome.
I think that's actually an interesting spotlight on how important a presentation at E3 can be, because they did such a good job of showing that game at E3. I mean, they just did such a good job of having it present well. It's nearly finished, so that really worked in its advantage. And it's very beautiful, and it has the great narrated parts. And so I think that really played well, and it demoed extremely well, obviously. Bastion, BioShock Infinite, From Dust, Journey, and Sound Shapes.
You know, there's a common axiom among the ironic Academy Awards viewers that you can replace the word best with most, and usually that's the winner, you know, like most acting in a supporting role.
Okay.
And I think original game, I think that should be the criteria for that, most original game rather than best original game, because...
I like that. So which original game would win of this list then?
In
which
my opinion,
most
Journey.
Original? Yeah, I can't...
And I fear BioShock Infinite may run away with it just because it's sort of the big marquee game, but I think Journey is the most original. Sound Shapes is wonderful, too.
Unless you're at a karaoke bar. Then Journey is not that original.
We already played the Journey game. It was in arcades. Had a cassette tape in it, kids. It'll be interesting. You know, Jeff, I don't know everybody. You know, I know the folks that I know from the enthusiast side of the Beat It business really well, but I don't know everybody in this group, and it's possible to read their minds.
Yeah.
I think Journey has a very strong shot at this ward. I think Journey has a very strong shot at this ward.
It deserves it.
I think you're right that Bioshock Infinite also does. And From Dusk was, I really enjoyed From Dusk quite a bit. So there's other things that could have been here. What else do you guys want to talk about on these lists before we get out of here? Hardwares, action games, adventures, PCs.
I think Rocksmith is in here for best hardware, and it got some heat at E3. I think that was kind of a surprise when people were going into it like, oh, great, another music game, just what we need. But people seem really jazzed on it in terms of the hardware and actually learning how to play guitar, which is what people were super excited about Rock Band 3 for.
I'm surprised to see it on the list. I was really surprised to see it on the list. Not as surprised as I was to see the Zoom for Kinect, but I was surprised to see it on there.
It's an impressive piece of tech. I don't know if they were trying to round out, you know, for Sony 3D display is on. Like, so the full list is the PlayStation Vita, Rocksmith, the Sony 3D display, Wii U, and Zoom for Kinect, which kind of sounds like to me we need more than Wii U and Vita on here. But I don't know, Rocksmith.
I think the 3D display was
I think's cool.
There was a number of us who were really excited about the use of the shutter glasses,
mm-hmm. right.
to be able to do multiplayer full screen for two people on the same couch. That's fucking cool. That was
on
I think
a 24-inch screen.
Yeah, that's the problem.
That is the problem.
It's great if you have a dorm room.
Yeah,
which is exactly the market they're looking at.
First steps.
I will say there is no innovative. Other category that excites me more than the best downloadable game category.
Okay.
Every single one of these games are games that I really want to play. Bastion, From Dust, Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet, Journey, Peppo and Yo.
Do you find that for me, downloadable games, I often forget I have because they're not sitting on a shelf looking in front of me. Like I loved Beyond Good and Evil HD when I started playing it, and then I sit down like, I want to play a game. And I'm like, oh, for whatever reason, it doesn't populate into my head.
Maybe. I mean, I play a lot of PC games, so I Steam, obviously.
You know, you have your collection, you're used to.
So I kind of know, maybe I've trained myself already to recognize that. On console, I could see how that's done, especially on Xbox. It's sort of hidden. You know what I mean? Like, you have to go through this game's library menu to go see the games that you've installed, whereas on PS3, it's already there, categorized with all of your other games that you see at one in one menu. So maybe that's a problem.
Yeah, I don't know. They're good games, though.
If you guys are going to give your best of show of these nominees, which one would you vote for?
Arkham City.
Yeah.
Well, I look at this list and I realize I didn't see any of these games because Garnet went to go see all the good stuff.
Ouch!
Garnet Lee presents E3.
Garnet Lee presents E3.
I did not do that to you.
I will say, of the ones that I have seen, Bioshock Infinite, which I have seen, is probably the one I'm most excited for that I would think was
Jeff, were you
most impressive.
Were you Arkham?
Arkham or Bioshock, it's I'm torn, although I was swayed heavily by, I can't remember whose argument it was, somebody's argument among all the people we talked to that I think it was Luke maybe that was saying that Arkham City is more impressive because they just let you play.
Well, yes, that was Luke's argument of demo versus
guided experience.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of swayed by that in a sense of like, what was the best of show? The best of the show is the thing that I could walk up and play and blew me away that way. I don't know.
I am ever so slightly above the others on the Infinite train. Mm-hmm. And that is not a slight to any of them. That is a...
Except for Tomb Raider.
Tomb Raider is not in that discussion for me. But I mean, for me, really, it's right now it's Infinite, but the separation between that and Uncharted 3 and Batman is thinner than a sheet of paper. It's so hard to call.
And Skyrim and Uncharted.
So hard to call for me. So hard to call.
Yeah.
So hard to call.
If I can only have 5 games over the next however many months, those might be the 5 I choose. I don't know.
It's crazy that we get Uncharted. Some of these games we get so soon, relatively speaking, for a lot of years, E3s. I think I've liked that Microsoft started that shift of we'll show you what you'll be playing this year. And
yeah.
It's cool to look at this list and be like, oh, shit.
And it really is presentationally, you know, so important that the games get the right foot forward. And it comes down to, obviously I'm a huge fan of the Pixel Junk stuff. They had Side Scroller there, which was the debut of it. Did anyone else see it?
Yes.
And I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. And I know from talking to some of the other judges, it just didn't even register because it was sort of out of sight, out of mind. And that's such a tough situation to be in because I think that it, you know, is punch for punch with any of these games. I loved it, but it's, you know, it is a bit of a beauty pageant. Which kind of speaks to Luke's thing about BioShock Infinite, is that in a beauty pageant, that presentation is pretty strong because you've got Ken Levine up there and he's talking while there's being this fantastic demos going on behind him.
Yeah.
And that's a beauty pageant.
If I had a sense that the game would not play as awesomely, I don't know.
If it's a beauty pageant, I would vote for the Saints Row 3 Car Wash Girls.
Really? Did you see him up close?
I will make
you ruin the illusion. Uh-huh. You drive by.
The totem pole of rankings of hot chicks at E3. Let me just say the lowest of the ones are the ones that actually have to work and wash your car. Much higher are
the ones,
ones
that just stand around.
Yeah.
I'll be super Canadian and say that I'm a little surprised that NHL 12 isn't on the sports games list, considering that there, franchise.
Dude, I will. There you go. That's another example of presentation.
Rates way better than Madden has over the last few years.
That EA did such
a
good job.
Seller for them as well.
So you exactly another case in point. EA did such a great job of putting FIFA in front of us and showing it to us and explaining to us why it was really fantastic. And the NHL stuff just was not put forward as it just wasn't presented as well. And I can tell you that's a difference. I know you're right. I know you're right about NHL being so popular. I know that the team is on it, but they did such a good job with FIFA that it just became, that was what was top of mind. And now we're going to get to what's the bottom of mind as we wrap the show up in our usual fashion with finishing moves.
Finishing moves.
Special tag team edition with Zav Damatos and Jeffrey Cannata.
That's right, Garnet. We're tag and teaming up on our finishing move this week because we got together and played some board games without you. Zav, tell them about the Twinkie.
It was...
Whoa. This isn't that kind of show.
That's a Ghostbusters reference.
Garnet, you should have been there. We played Formula D, which is a game that's based around the Formula One racing series, I think, that you're familiar with.
When I think racing, I think board games.
Yes. And yeah. You know what?
Go ahead and mock.
Surprisingly...
You'll be eating your words
later. I think it was really great to meet everyone that you had over at your place, and thank you for hosting. And the thing that I thought was really interesting is when we were playing, everyone in the beginning of Formula D was sort of bored because it takes a while to get in. But as soon as you hit a corner, everyone's standing and hovering over the board, counting their spaces, trying to – like at the end, I was in last place and I pulled this like crazy move to pass Dan.
Jeff
to
has
leave
the
him
look of
place.
A proud father right
it,
now.
It was really – and then there was another game. Was it called Resistance?
Yeah, The Resistance.
The Resistance, where it's basically a game where you just yell at each other and accuse people of being spies.
Awesome.
A lot of fun. I had a great time. And next time.
Yeah, dude, Formula D is an amazing simulation of racing using dice. It's incredible. You actually have your own gear shift box, and you can shift gears, and it changes which die you roll. You have to maneuver corners, and it's remarkable how much it feels like actually driving a car and racing. You're mocking me with your smile.
The strategy behind it.
Awesome.
It was really awesome.
And one of these days.
I think that's a successful tag team.
I'm sorry I ran into you, officer. I was rolling dice. I don't know what happened. I thought I was supposed to
You can
dice.
See, by the way, we were actually shooting reviews for TRS of those that night. So you can see Zav play and all of us playing on upcoming episodes of the Totally Rad Show if you check those out.
Very cool.
Is there a "the" in that? I want to say I can post on NeoGAF now.
Oh, gosh.
Which, right, so, Mom, if you're listening, look for there for signs that I might kill myself. That's where it'll happen soon. But no, actually, I look forward to it. One of my favorite things about doing what I do in comedy and video games and everything is engaging with a community and being part of it. I really like that type of interaction in today's entertainment that wasn't there before. And by no means do I feel like I'm different or apart from it. I love being in there, and I look forward to, you know, for this show and all the comments and stuff in there.
You're always very good about engaging with the Shack audience as well.
It's fun. Yeah. And I'm sorry about my voice.
I am so excited that we spent the beginning of this show and last week's show talking about two fantastically creative and exciting Japanese designed games, because you know there's been a stretch where we've been down in you know, just in general in the West on where Japanese game design was, and I like what these games do, and it really to me speaks to where there might be a future. And I'm going to especially hone in on the first thing that I brought up about Shadows of the Damned, which is it uses an off-the-shelf technology in Unreal Engine 3, and it's been a long time coming. There have been other games that have tried to do this, but it is able to do all those things that are exciting and wonderful and it's creative, but still have a great foundation. And for the last 3 or 4 years, we watched as some designs sought to bring in Western appeal in different relatively unsuccessful ways. The way to do it is just to be creative and do a great game. And maybe there's people who help, you know, give you some suggestion of how to have a, you know, a more appealing game. But really, getting down to what the creative spark and core is and letting that come through is all that we needed to see from Japanese games to get back to be great. Whether it's Child of Eden, Shadows of the Damned, both of them fantastic because they like a freaking laser beam just hit you.
Shooting out of your hand.
Hit you with that creative fucking spark, and it's awesome and it's thrilling and it's exciting. And I love lots of other games, but man, there's nothing like playing a game that hits you like that.
I hope people support those games.
Support them. Support Totally Rad Show, totallyradshow.com on your whatever every day.
Eyeball
on your iPhone. You have an iPhone app or anything?
We do actually. We have an Android app.
Sweet. Oh, and speaking of Android apps and F1, did you see that the Game Dev Story guys have a new game out, and it's out on Android? Yeah.
No.
Grand Prix Story. Grand Prix Story. And wow, you can play it on your Android device right now. $4.99 American.
While we're plugging my shows, we reviewed Cars 2 this week, and that has stopped being about NASCAR, and the second one's about Grand Prix.
Because Grand Prix is awesome.
Pretty cool.
It's what everybody should be watching. Zav D'Amatos, who you can catch every day on ShaqNews.com.
Every day of the week.
Christian Spicer, anything you're up to you'd like to say hello to the folks?
Well, a few fans of this show that I got to meet at E3, Bill McGee, who I believe gave the hammer a hockey puck. That I think went through Garnet, which is...
Yep, he did.
Went through you.
And
I passed it.
Passed along.
I passed it.
He went right through him.
And then I know some people that have found the Cool Party Guys podcast I do, Stand Up, Sit Down. We are actually doing our first live show Tuesday the 28th at Lestat's in San Diego. So if you're in San Diego, come out. I think it'll be a fun...
Lestat's? Is that... A vampire owns that club?
It is. It is a coffee shop / venue where we do comedy once a week, but it's Cut the Teeth of Jewel, Jason Mraz. Great history from musicians coming out of that place. And we look forward to doing the first live podcast. I think it'll be fun.
Awesome. And of course, in the booth today, Miss Brooklyn, who's taking great care of us, and Del Rio. If you want to catch up with Del Rio, you can always find him at facebook.com/Del Rio Music and reverbnation.com/Del Rio. And last but not least, that was the Felix Culpa in today's music break. They are out on tour the rest of July. You can catch them in Minneapolis, DeKalb, Chicago, St. Louis, Covington, and Grand Rapids. The rest of this month, we will have the tour dates in the show notes if you're in the Midwest and would like to go see them. That's it. It's your weekend confirmed. Thanks very much for joining us. Until next week, we are Ghost. The new me can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine. Try to stop me, but they don't get close, so they do it from a Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.